Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
I wasn't here, and also he's scheduled to come on the program tomorrow. That will not be happening, so I can't tell you right now who's going to be on for tomorrow on Tomorrow Matters, but I will let you know soon enough. Please do listen in, and remember, we change tomorrow by changing today, and we have to, because tomorrow really matters. Tell a friend, and stay tuned to the Peter P. Collins Show coming up next after the CBS News.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News. I'm Harley Carnes. Belief without structure. Religion without the fire. It's become the way of things religious in America, according to a Pew Forum survey.
One of the most comprehensive surveys of religion in America, the latest Pew findings show almost all Americans say they believe in God, but many have doubts.
While 7 in 10 Americans say that they are absolutely certain of God's existence, a substantial minority are less certain in their belief.
Greg Smith of the Pew Forum says they also found the vast majority of Americans pray and believe the Bible is the word of God, but also found a surprising 70% think those of other religions can also find salvation, and most think the teachings of their own religion are subject to different interpretations. Bob Fuzz, CBS News, Washington.
The Mississippi hasn't crested yet in parts of southern Illinois and Missouri. CBS's Cammie McCormick needs her hip waders and a trolling motor.
The river is not expected to crest here at Winfield for another couple of days, but the waters could still rise another half foot. I'm in front of a house here that's been sandbagged. It's along Highway 79, where to one side of the highway, the waters are still rising. This family has taken its belongings out of its house and placed its two chickens in cages on top of a garage to try to keep them safe.
Stealing chicken from the mouths of the poor. The Food Bank of Delaware says someone stole two tractor trailers with 53,000 pounds of donated chicken for needy families. In Gloucester, Massachusetts, where 17 pregnancies at the local high school are quadruple a normal year's 4, the hubbub's been over how it happened. Was there a secret pact? School Superintendent Christopher Farmer.
Were there a group of pregnant girls who, by virtue of their common circumstance, came together to talk about supporting one another as they bring up their babies?
United Airlines plans to lay off hundreds of pilots and park many of its planes at the end of summer, spokeswoman Megan McCarthy.
First notifications will occur in mid-July for 100 pilots. Those will be effective mid-September, and this will continue well into 2009.
950 pilot jobs will be eliminated. 1,600 managers will also lose theirs. United Airlines canceled a flight in Salt Lake City last week, gave the passengers free tickets and other freebies. The pilot had declared himself emotionally unsafe to fly and refused to go. The Federal Aviation Regulations say pilots are supposed to do exactly that. The airline says it's investigating. It'll take necessary action. Wall Street, the Dow down a fraction. NASDAQ off 20 points. Comedian and actor George Carlin went to a hospital with chest pains and he died there.
He went after a lot of what he thought was wrong, and I think that's what comedians are meant to do. He was a great example for comics everywhere. He told the truth.
And CBS TV's Craig Ferguson.
In the courtroom, they'll say to you, tell us, in your own words. Do you have your own words?
George Carlin was 71. This is CBS News.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, buy 3 Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the 4th free. Plus, all other Goodyear tires are on sale. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 6/13/08 to 6/28/08.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger than life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/small business.
The Supreme Court says the government can continue with the border fence, no environmental balls of twine. On criminal defendants, the poor have a right to a lawyer quicker, as soon as he sees a judge.
This is yet another decision from this conservative court that actually expands the rights of criminal defendants by ensuring their right to counsel begins earlier rather than later in a case.
CBS News legal analyst Andrew Cohen. And a decision is expected on whether Navy training with sonar trumps protection of the whales, or is it the other way around? A very smart move by a 24-year-old Colorado woman who was injured in the Bavarian Alps while hiking alone, and no one was near. Searchers were looking, but couldn't hear her shouts. One of those long cable car-like logging cables was nearby, so she took her bra off and tied it to it, assuming it would surely get the logging crew's attention, and it worked. They'd heard about a lost hiker, called the police. She was rescued. Harley Carnes, CBS News.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, buy three Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the fourth free. Plus, all other Goodyear tires are on sale. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 6/13/08 to 6/28/08.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger than life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, beaming your way from sunny San Francisco. Thanks for joining us. We got lots to talk about, great people to talk with, including you. You can call in anytime, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And we welcome Joshua E. Smith. That's Josh Emerson Smith, who joins us as an assistant producer today on the Peter B. Collins Show. He'll be taking your calls, so be nice to him. He's still trying to figure out how to run the switchboard and all our computers and everything. But you know our number, 888-573-8372. Later this hour, filmmaker David Novak will join us, a powerful new documentary called Burning the Future, Coal in America. And as the energy debate heats up and Bush and McCain are talking about offshore drilling and ANWR drilling, well, coal is the dirty elephant in our living room. Half of America's power is generated from coal, and huge amounts of our climate change, global warming emissions come from these coal-fired power plants. Also on today's show, an hour away, Dar Jamil, author of Beyond the Green Zone, will talk with us about the current state of affairs in Iraq, the status of forces agreement, the oil deal, refugees, and whether the surge is working. Frank Rich said, well, hey, if the surge is working, he said in Sunday's New York Times, can we go home now? I think that's an important question. Caroline Fredrickson will join us from the ACLU to talk about the stinker, the vote on Friday, with 80-some Democrats supporting the Republican position on FISA, and this law is ugly in many respects. We'll get the details from Caroline Fredrickson, an attorney at the ACLU. And somewhere in that time, depending on votes on the House floor, Congressman Keith Ellison of Minnesota will call in and talk with us about his problems with the FISA law that passed on Friday. And there's a protest going on to keep Coney Island in New York from getting all corporatized. Savitri D is the the protester, and she is in a mermaid suit at Coney Island. She's going to protest for the next 3 days, I think, on a hunger strike. So we will check in with her in the free speech zone later today. So that's what's on tap for us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Joining me first is Deborah Rohan. She has written a powerful new book called The Olive Grove, A Palestinian Story. And I would just like to remind people that about a month ago, President Bush went and insulted, he alienated many Americans while issuing his comments to the Knesset in Israel on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of the founding of Israel. And that is also a dark day, because 60 years ago this year, Palestinians were forced off their land to make way for Israel.
All the world over, so easy to see. People everywhere just want to be free. Listen, people, listen, that's the way it should be. Deep in the valley, people got to be free.
And if you'd like an ugly example of long-term occupation, it's been 42 years that Israel has locked down the Palestinian people on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. And their plight is often unsung. But this new book, The Olive Grove, A Palestinian Story, I found very touching and a beautiful read, because it puts you in contact with the history of Palestine and the real people who live there. Deborah Rohan, welcome to our program today.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me on.
It's nice to talk with you, and I want you to know that I have some Palestinian friends, the Araj family, and they're three generations now in the U.S., and at a party in Detroit a few years back, I met the grandmother, and we had a nice chat, and about midway through our conversation, she reached into her purse, and she pulled out a little special bag or purse that she carries inside her purse, and in there were some keys. She said, "These are the keys to my home in Palestine. Do you think I'll ever get to go home?" And it really touched me in a way that I will never forget. And I am not Jewish, and I'm not Arab, and I'm not a real direct party to the dispute. But I have a great sense of feeling that Israel has a right to exist, and that right is contingent on proper treatment of the Palestinians. We haven't been able to get there over years of effort and negotiation. We now have a ceasefire that's been negotiated between Hamas and Israel. And I want to start there. What is your sense of the prospects of this current truce holding?
Well, I think every time there's a new peace agreement, everyone is a little bit hesitant to be really optimistic, because there's just been so many and there've been a lot of failures. But you always have to look at the positive side and say, hopefully this will be one. And this is different than other ceasefires, because they've never really, the relationship with Hamas is so new, because they've only been in power for a short amount of time. So the last ceasefire was, I think, 15 months ago, and so this is the second one. And I mean, you have to be optimistic. There's really no other way to be.
Yeah.
Hopefully it will work.
Yeah, I certainly hope so, and I'd love to see it lead to real peace talks and real negotiations that return freedom and some of the disputed territories to the Palestinians, particularly where Israel has built settlements on property that they know is not within their existing boundaries. Deborah, when you saw the coverage of the president's visit to Israel, and his participation in the 60th celebration of Israel's founding, how did you feel, and what did you feel the American media left out in covering those events?
Well, every president and every, as you can see, presidential contender is a strong supporter of Israel, and I think that there's no surprise or even disappointment that the president would support Israel and recognize the fact that the 60th anniversary is significant, because it is. I mean, it's something people, and Jews in particular, but others too, celebrate the world over. And, of course, he did leave out the Palestinian side of the story, and it has been left out, which is why I chose to write that book in the first place. I think there's a reason why it's been left out, and then there's many reasons why it's been left out. But even Palestinians themselves have not put the story out there as clearly as they might, and that might be for reasons that are legitimate, but simply it hasn't been told very well in this country. So the fact that the president would go there, he's on an anniversary of the celebration of Israel. I mean, I guess that doesn't disappoint me or surprise me. It's just, it is something to celebrate, but there are two sides to the story. Actually, there's more than two sides to the story. So yeah. It's unfortunate that that side is often neglected.
And is the world observing the Palestinian Nakba this year? That's the Arab term for catastrophe.
Well, some of the world certainly is, and I think that it's becoming more and more apparent in people's minds that that there was a catastrophe, or there was certainly an event that was unfortunate in very serious ways with various long-term implications for the Palestinian people that we're still seeing today. So it's, you know, more people are finding out, more people are recognizing, more people are wanting to hear both sides of the story, I think, than they have before. Whether the whole world is actually going through and recognizing that there was a celebration or an honor, not a celebration, but maybe an honoring of al-Nakba, you know. It's small, but it's growing.
Mm-hmm. Deborah Rohan with us on the Peter B. Collins Show. Her new book is called The Olive Grove, A Palestinian Story. If you have a question or comment, she's with us to the bottom of the hour. And our toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. Deborah, I understand that you recently accompanied a group of students from the Denver area to the Middle East. Tell us about this.
Well, it's actually an outgrowth of studying and doing the research for this book. As you may or may not know, I actually self-published it a few years ago, and it's only now being released by a regular publisher, an independent publisher of Saki Books in London. And so when that book was first released, it was an Israeli, former Israeli commander who had just come to Denver to head up an Israeli institute at the University of Denver, read my book, and he was touched by it and felt like it had shown him something that as an Israeli and as an Israeli in a commanding position in the IDF, he had never heard really himself a lot of these things. He had never really heard that side of the story which my book at that time represented or displayed it for him. And so he read that and he asked me to come to work for an Israeli institute at the University of Denver. It's actually called the Institute for the Study of Israel in the Middle East. And in that program, we started reaching out. He hired me because of this book to reach out to the Muslim and Palestinian community here in Denver and dialogue. And that association over a few years led to something called the Student Interfaith Peace Project, which I'm directing now, and it's a program of that. It's called ISMA, of that center at DU.
Mm-hmm.
And we just, you know, wanted to have high school students reach out towards one another. When you see the growing gaps in the world between the different faiths, especially the Abrahamic faith, we just felt like this was a good opportunity to maybe start bringing them together. So we've been working with it for about a year, and we just now completed, I guess you'd call it, a capstone project of it, and it was an amazing, amazing experience for both the students and for myself. They met with they themselves are Muslim, Christian, and Jewish students, an equal mix. And then we met with the same in Israel and had a lot of dialogue and a lot of learning about the conflict, went to various sites in Israel as well as the West Bank and Bethlehem. So it was an amazing experience. And it was an outgrowth, really, of this book.
And if you could pick one anecdote, an interchange between one of the students on your trip and an Israeli or Palestinian, what kind of conversations took place? What kind of information was exchanged?
Well, boy, it's hard to pick one out. There were a number of dialogues that we held that were sort of formal dialogues and informal dialogues with students there. And I think, you know, a lot of times we just heard a lot of the same arguments in the same positions that you hear with politicians and, you know, they condemning us for having leadership that was not very open-minded to the Palestinians. And, you know, we went to the West Bank and they told us things that were from their perspective, just that they feel like their story is never really heard in America and that they're not very well supported, they feel like that the Jewish side is always the one that's presented and that their side is rarely spoken of and that they're misrepresented in the media here, which may or, I mean, I think it probably is true. I think they are underrepresented in American media. You know, I think probably one of the things that I think of that was the most powerful is one of the things we did was we were walking through the desert sort of in a early morning pre-sunrise walk, and it was the same desert where the Israelites were walking for 40 years, and we had students who had not really spoken to each other and very addressing the issues, and there was like a Jewish student that we brought and a Palestinian student from who was an Israeli citizen, and they really started just, you know, going after one another with first gently and then sort of in an attack mode, and they worked through it. I mean, they really didn't like each other at the beginning, and then you saw them the rest of the trip. They're on the bus together. They became friends. So it wasn't really exactly what they said, but to watch that transition was really made me feel like the trip was worthwhile.
Well, that's interesting role modeling for some adults.
You know, and it's all, it is, of course.
I need to take a break, Deborah. We'll come back in a moment and pick up there. Deborah Rohan, her new book, The Olive Grove, A Palestinian Story. It's a great read, a family history. We'll talk more about it in the next segment. And if you have a question or comment about the truce between Israel and Palestine, call me now. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You're listening to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman, and you're listening to Monterey Bay's Progressive Voice, KRXA 540. Think for yourself!
Miguel Sarmiento, owner and chef of the Mexicali Grill in New Monterey, cordially invites you to visit his restaurant and enjoy quality Mexican food prepared with California seasonings and sauces, all with personalized attentive service. Miguel has more than 14 years of experience preparing Italian, Hawaiian, Mexican, French, and American dishes in restaurants throughout Monterey County. Looking to savor the best Mexicali cuisine served with great margaritas or fine imported or domestic beers? Visit the Mexicali Grill today, located at 204 Lighthouse Avenue at the corner of Reeside Avenue in New Monterey. To experience one-of-a-kind dishes, don't forget the weekly specials. The Mexicali Grill is open Monday through Saturday for lunch until 3 and for dinner from 5 to 9. For takeout orders, call 375-9801. That's 375-9801. Miguel has a message for all Central Coast residents who appreciate delicious, high-quality Mexican food at reasonable prices.
Todos son bienvenidos en el Mexicali Grill. Try us. You'll like us a lot.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special news bulletin.
The United States of America was suddenly and deliberately attacked.
Professor David Ray Griffin, author of A New Pearl Harbor, will disclose the truth behind September 11th, Saturday, June 28th at 7 p.m., Church of Religious Science, corner of Franklin and Pacific in Monterey. For information, call 375-2016.
Hello, this is Solazar.
Hi, I'm Caroline.
Join us this Sunday at 6 p.m. for Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation.
Together, we'll transform your relationships, communication, health, and the ability to reach your goals and dreams.
Good Vibrations, Sunday at 6 p.m. on AM 540 KRXA.
We are all fools at one time or another. Buddha said the fool who knows he is a fool is much wiser. The fool who thinks he is wise is a fool indeed. How true this is. And for a while the fool's mischief tastes sweet, sweet as honey. But in the end it turns bitter, and how bitterly we suffer. Well, if you're interested in not suffering anymore and maybe want to take a different approach to your life, I might be able to help in one small way. Here on KRXA on Saturday and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m., I offer my radio program Aspire. I hope you will do me the honor of listening, and maybe the two of us can find that divine wisdom that has always lived within us, and we just were too foolish to recognize. Come Aspire with me.
Alan Show.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend. Smiling faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within. Smiling faces.
Coming up about 10 minutes from now, filmmaker David Novak will join us. His new documentary is called Burning the Future, all about coal in America. We continue with writer Deborah Rohan. Her book, The Olive Grove, A Palestinian Story, is out and should be available at your local independent bookstore. If not, ask them for it. And Deborah, tell us the origins of this. This is a family history of the Mograbi family. And I have to say, in reading it, you personalize it in a way, the voice of the book, that is really very compelling. And there's a lot of dialogue that you put together here, and your descriptions of scenes and sights and smells is very detailed, and I would call it lyrical in many respects. Tell us about how you researched this and ultimately wrote the book.
Well, first of all, thank you for that compliment. It did take me a number of years to write it, and I think I wrote it over three times from start to finish. So it took some effort, so it's nice to hear and appreciate it. But, I think that the reason why it is very detailed and maybe realistic is because I spent so much time with the Mograbi family. I mean, literally just weeks and months, and the family was in Denver, the Mograbi family. They're Palestinian refugees who have been living in Lebanon since 1948, and they had been in Denver because of the Lebanese civil war that was going between 1975 and 1990, and they just couldn't take it anymore and came here for safety for a few years, and now they're back there. But in the interim, I was able to, there's nine children in the family, and most of the boys were in the United States, so I had the opportunity to just spend many, many hours interviewing them. And whenever I had a question, what kind of uniform did the soldier wear? What kind of food? Anything. What kind of flower? All the details I would just write. Primarily Hamza, who was the main character and the main person who I was connecting with. He was just always available. So from the personal perspective, that's where I had a lot of information. And also I traveled to Lebanon and I traveled to Israel, to their former home that, where someone else was living. And so I went and saw it firsthand. And so I think all of that really helped contribute to the detail level. And then as far as the historical, Helmsley would also often say that I was his harshest critic because I was very non-believing, I should say, of his story for so long. And I really had to do my own independent research, which I spent just a number of years actually doing the research from other sources other than what I traditionally might have used. Like I tried to get authentic Israeli, or I guess it wasn't Israel at the time, but authentic voices from Jews who lived in the area at the time, and also from Turkish sources, from British sources, from other people who maybe gave a different view than we were able to get in the United States.
Yeah. I got immersed in your early chapters about the grandfather and the right around the 1920s when the Ottoman Empire was breaking up, and it was very uncertain what the future of Palestine would be at that point. Deborah, I just have about 45 seconds remaining. Okay. Let me ask you, from your recent visit, how do people view George Bush, who talks about the promotion of democracy, when Hamas won the election and then was, sanctioned by the U.S. and Israel?
I don't hear people talking about that very much. I think that's a subject probably that we have here more than they have there, just because at the time, of course, they were unhappy with that, and you can see that that's a bit of a hypocritical stance. But, you know, really, they're not onto those conversations anymore. They're so in the present, and they just want to know, what can we do now? And they were very, as they came to us, it was always, you're bringing us a message of hope. Near almost every single person we talked to said, you know, we need to have people aware of our situation, whether we're Israelis or Palestinians.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just very grateful that we were coming in a way of bringing hope, and that was really more what they were focusing on.
Deborah Rohan, The Olive Grove, A Palestinian Story. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell. John McCain helped a French company take a U.S. Air Force contract from an American company. Doug Cunningham reports.
Republican presidential candidate John McCain helped give a $35 billion Air Force refueling tanker contract to a French company, costing as many as 44,000 good U.S. jobs. Paul Sharon is secretary treasurer of the IFTPE, a union representing 20,000 Boeing workers.
One of the changes that he asked for is that they withdraw from their requirement the concern over the Airbus aircraft being subsidized by European governments. And that was taken out of the proposal as a result of his influence. At that time, John McCain on his own staff had lobbyists that worked for EADS and also had them working on his campaign staff. It is outrageous that U.S. tax dollars are spent and the consideration that those tax dollars wouldn't be used to be floated back into the U.S. economy and instead sent over to Europe, which really does stimulate their economy. It's an outrage.
Sharon says the Air Force awarding of the multi-billion dollar contract to a French company chooses the more expensive, less capable aircraft while undermining the U.S. economy and free trade laws. The General Accounting Office last week said the Air Force bidding process was flawed and recommended that it be rebid, giving Boeing another shot at keeping the $35 billion contract in the U.S.
The Supreme Court had a busy week weighing in on cases important to workers. On Thursday, the High Court ruled 7-1 on a decision that will make it easier for older workers to allege age discrimination. Under the ruling, companies are responsible to prove that the laying off of older workers is necessary and not just for age reasons. The court also ruled against a California law that prohibits the use of state money for anti- or pro-union activities. On a 7-2 decision, the court ruled that the law interferes with an area of law that belongs with the federal government. Justin Paul Stevens wrote for the majority that the National Labor Relations Act regulates how employers can act during organizing efforts. The law was challenged by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which argued that the law silenced employers who wish to add their input. The chamber also argued that it was an attempt to prevent companies from opposing union activity. Here is today's economic report. How much impact will the closure of a GM plant in Janesville, Wisconsin, have on the surrounding community? A study by the University of Wisconsin suggests that 9,000 jobs will be lost in the region, including the loss of $500 million in labor income. More than 800 workers will be laid off at the plant, which is seen as one of the biggest employers in the region. The study's author is Professor Stephen Deller, who said it is a worst-case scenario.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
Every Sunday morning at 10, check out Rock Roller Real Estate, America's favorite real estate show. Learn about investing, 1031 exchanges, buying and selling homes, and where the hottest real estate markets are. Rock Roller Real Estate, every Sunday morning at 10. To be a guest, call 408-892-3376. That's 408-892-3376. For more information, stop by our website at rockrollerrealestate.com. Rock Roller Real Estate, Sunday mornings at 10, right here on KRXA 540.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. A fresh debate has erupted in this country about our energy future. The Republicans try to frame it away from climate change. And John McCain wants to build 45 new nuclear power plants. This half hour, we meet filmmaker David Novak. Burning the Future is out on DVD. It's called, subtitled, Coal in America. And I met David a little over a month ago in Missoula, Montana, at the International Wildlife Film Festival. David, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Thank you, Peter. It's my distinct pleasure to be on today.
Well, it's great to talk with you. And I heard you talking about your documentary at the film festival there in Missoula. You were kind enough to send me a copy, and I watched it last week. And I think you have a number of important messages in here that are extremely time-sensitive as we're dealing with climate change issues. And not only that, the jobs issue in coal-dependent states like West Virginia, where we saw a very lopsided outcome in the Democratic primary recently, and the issues of, you know, the long-term viability of coal, particularly when mountaintop mining is used, that just devastates the landscape and leaves a huge mess behind for perhaps thousands of years. So I think you've done an excellent job. And my first comment to you is that I think it's very well produced, and it's not agitprop. You really let people tell their stories about the various angles on the use of coal, the way it is mined, its impact on local communities. And I just think you did a real good job.
Oh, thank you very much. I mean, the stories that come out of the coal field from both the folks who are facing environmental devastation and health issues and the folks who work for the industry, I mean, they're all very powerful stories. And it's a very complicated web of life there that's tied to coal and extraction for over 130, 140 years. And, if we're going to move forward with the clean energy economy, that's going to have a great impact on the web of life in Appalachia.
Well, and my roots are in Ohio, and I spent my summers in high school working on a factory line with a bunch of guys who preferred that to working the coal mines in Harlan County, Kentucky. And their stories were rich and colorful and sometimes very funny, scatological. but I have a sense of connection to those hardworking people who really have risked their lives and with black lungs sacrificed some of the best years of their lives to keep the lights on and my computer running.
That's right. And you know, that's really one of America's best-kept secrets. 7 years ago when I began embarking on this, I had no idea, living in New York City, that half of our electricity came from coal. I thought of coal as something still of the Victorian era back then, and it was quite an awakening, and it's been awakening for many people I know, just to let them in on the subject.
Well, give us some quick statistics, will you, just an overview here. I understand that about half of our electricity in this country comes from coal-fired plants.
That's correct.
And where does that coal come from, David?
The coal comes from a combination of places. The majority of the tonnage actually comes from the Powder River Basin out in Montana and Wyoming, although that is a lower sulfur but also a lower energy content coal, and one has to burn much more of it to generate the same amount of power. But a significant amount of it comes from Appalachia, and out of the Appalachian coal, well, in West Virginia, for instance, 40% of the coal coming out of West Virginia is coming off of surface mines, mountaintop removal coal mining.
Mm-hmm.
That's a major chunk, and that's the mechanization that has come along with that has in fact reduced the labor in West Virginia, the coal mining labor, from 120,000 miners 30, 40 years ago to about 15,000 miners today.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the quality of life for miners, whether they go into shafts underground and risk their lives, as we saw most recently in Pennsylvania and Utah, or if they're part of this process where the whole top of the mountain is essentially blown off, they extract the coal from a couple of layers down, and then they kind of patch it up and move on, and they leave incredible environmental damage behind them. And, of course, many of the very families that provide the labor for the mining, whether it's underground or on the surface, are dependent on their local environment for the, you know, their own future and the future of their families. And so they're really being asked to make incredible sacrifices.
That's absolutely true. And you see it in the communities. You see where there are folks who are fighting and standing up to the coal companies to put an end to mountaintop removal mining and some of the coal processing also that has been polluting the water table, you know, beyond potability. You see those people conflicted with other people in their community and sometimes in their families who are simply afraid of job loss. And the coal industry plays that card. They play the job loss card. It's no different than it was in the 1920s and 1930s during union organizing in the coal fields. Everybody lives with the fear that their job is on the line. And as a result, it's become difficult, certainly complicated, to motivate people to stand up and put an end to the most egregious forms of mining.
David Novak is with us, filmmaker of Burning the Future. There's quite a team that produced this, and I don't want to give anybody short shrift, but David was a writer and producer, and what else did you do?
And I directed the film.
Directed, too, yeah.
Yeah, and I have a producing partner, Alexi Zulis, terrific guy, and he's produced a number of films in the New York area. And my editor, Richard Hankin, who co-wrote the film with me, just did a fabulous job. He's mm-hmm. an Academy-nominated editor, and he's really terrific.
And there's a great supporting website up at burningthefuture.com, and I invite you to take a look there, and if you're so inclined, you can order a DVD. It is burningthefuture.com, and you're all set up to ship DVDs now?
Absolutely. DVDs are ready to go. And what's most interesting about the DVDs is that in addition to the film and some video extras, there's a ROM portion on the DVD that the viewers can pop into their computer and access what we call the coal impact guide for really digging down as deeply as anyone wants to go on not only the issues of extraction in Appalachia, but also the issues of coal as it relates to coal-fired power and how that impacts climate change and how it impacts the health of the communities nationwide.
Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't gotten to that yet, so I'll have to. I did play the DVD, but I haven't checked out the ROM section of it, and I will definitely do that. David, and you weren't sponsored by Clean Coal, were you?
No, I was not sponsored by Clean Coal. I'm sure many of your listeners are aware of the fact that Clean Coal is a lobby organization. It's called the Americans for Balanced Energy Choices. And they have spent $35 million this year spewing out a campaign to convince the American people and, frankly, the legislators in state capitals and in Washington that coal is clean. And coal is very far from clean. One of the things they're relying on for that story that they're spinning is that carbon sequestration, which is sticking the carbon dioxide, the climate change carbon dioxide, sticking it under the ground after the coal is burned, they're relying on the fact that that is feasible and will happen very soon. And the truth of the matter is it isn't going to happen very soon. It's at least 15 years, if not more, before they even know if it's feasible, and it will be exorbitantly expensive, even if it is feasible, making the cost of coal-fired power much greater than the cost of wind and solar power.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you and I met in Montana, where the governor, Brian Schweitzer, is trying to promote this whole idea of carbon sequestration. And I'm not a scientist. I'm open to it. But at this point, it is just a research concept. And we have these greenwashing commercials on television. I mean, they even sponsored the Democratic debates on CNN.
That's right.
And it floored me, David, when I'm sitting there and Well, tonight's Democratic debate brought to you by Hyundai and clean coal. That's just like, holy cow, have we completely outsourced and sold out our politics?
And we have. And, you know, when you look at climate change as a national issue, it's consistently rated as either number third or number fourth of, on the concern list of Americans. There were very, very few questions on climate change in the debates. And I expect that to continue into the fall as the clean coal lobby continues to sponsor the debates. It's really frightening, although many say that this is the coal industries and the utility industries, you know, last gasp, because they know that if the country is going to get serious about dealing with climate change, the first place we're going to go is coal-fired power. Mm-hmm. It's 40% of our carbon emissions. I mean, it's tremendous.
Yeah. And the greenwashing that I'm referring to, David, is there any scientific basis for it, or is it purely part of the Competitive Enterprise Institute and that cabal's effort to mislead people and try to delay any response to global warming?
Well, the scientific evidence says that on a small scale, carbon sequestration is possible. It's been done. It's been tried, but on a very small scale. On a scale large enough to really have an impact on our carbon emissions, that is entirely theoretical. And scientists are working on it, but we have to ask the serious, hard question. Do we want to invest the kind of billions and billions of dollars it's going to take to even find out if that is feasible? And then at the end up with the power infrastructure that is so expensive that we will have wasted 15 to 20 years on not pursuing renewables. You know, is that the way that we want to go? I mean, I don't think that's the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of the equation is you can't call coal clean if you're not dealing with the full life cycle. And the life cycle begins with extraction. And the extraction issues are not going away, and they are horrific.
That's a very important point, because most of us who are what I would call suburban greens, we're really focused on the emissions part of it and the climate change aspect. But as your film just, vividly depicts, the impact of extracting the coal, whether we, you know, tunnel underground or blow off the tops of mountains, is equally distressing to that regional environment.
Absolutely.
And we just kind of write that off because, hey, it's a big country and, you know, you can fly over and a lot of it still looks pretty.
Well, and you know what? It's a big region that's being polluted because, as Burning the Future points out, the water table that is being affected by coal processing, and like you said, this happens regardless of the form of extraction. The coal gets processed, and heavy metals are released into the groundwater and into the surface water in the areas where the toxic sludge is stored in giant, unlined lakes, essentially.
Yeah.
This water table serves Atlanta. It works its way out to D.C. It serves Cincinnati and further down the Ohio River, Lexington, Kentucky. If you draw a circle around the southern Appalachians from Pittsburgh down to Alabama, that whole circle of metropolises and megalopolis is being affected by this toxic water.
David Novak with us. Burning the Future, Coal in America, is a new film. It's out on DVD. Go to the website burningthefuture.com. You can get more information and order up your very own copy. We'll take a break and return. And if you have a question or comment about that clean, clean coal, give us a call right now. Lines open at 888-5-PETER-B. That's toll-free. 888-573-8372. Thanks for listening to the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540. Visit our website at krxa540.com. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years. and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Natura Vita invites all KRXA listeners to participate in the grand opening of its new North Salinas location at 650 East Laurel Drive. Don't miss the fun. With nonstop entertainment, live music, and free samples of natural food and health products, the staff and management welcome all to the inauguration of the new Natura Vita store and restaurant at 650 East Laurel Drive in North Salinas this Sunday afternoon, June 29th from 3 to 5. Don't miss your chance to learn firsthand about traditional and modern natural health products and practices while enjoying delicious and healthy food in a fun and festive atmosphere. Smoothies, anyone? Come to the new Natura Vita store and restaurant this Sunday afternoon from 3 to 5.
Hey, are you driving around looking for a coffee shop with free internet? Look no further. Right here in Pacific Grove, you'll find Black Forest Espresso, a fun and friendly place to hang out. We have a large espresso bar ready to make any gourmet drink. Homemade frats, mochas, lattes. How about 100% fruit smoothies and old-fashioned milkshakes with 14 flavors? Try the new pina colada. Black Forest Espresso is also the only place to get soft-serve, fat-free frozen yogurt. We have it all. Soups, sandwiches. We're the last hometown coffee shop at the Country Club Gate Shopping Center next to Save Mart at Forest and David, Pacific Grove. Or check out blackforestespresso.com.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Dar Jamail will join us at the top of the next hour. He's an expert on Iraq, has traveled the region. We're going to talk with him about the refugee crisis, about the oil deal that's underway, and the SOFA, Status of Forces Agreement, too. That's coming up next hour, plus Caroline Fredrickson from the ACLU talking about the Democrats caving in on FISA. And Congressman Keith Ellison, the Democrat from Minnesota, the only elected Muslim in the House, is expected to call in sometime before, somewhere in there. He's voting on the floor, and so we give him flexibility about the exact time. But we'll have some expert commentary for you there on the passage of the FISA bill in the House last Friday. We continue with filmmaker David Novak, N-O-V-A-C-K is how he spells his name, and Burning the Future, : America is the film we're talking about, available on DVD. Go to the website burningthefuture.com and get full information. Pick up a copy if you'd like. Chris and Salinas joins us. Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Peter?
Hey, I'm doing okay. I wanted to thank you for your request, and I hope you heard the segment last week about American Axle and the United Auto Workers.
Yeah, I appreciate you. You're the only one that will even cover it, it seems like.
Well, I try to follow up on these things. We're also working to bring you coverage of the labor battle over nursing between SEIU and the American Nurses Association.
Yeah, that's a real powerful situation there.
It is, yeah. What's on your mind right now?
Well, I just wanted to, someone answered what I was going to talk about, is that nobody, as far as the coal power goes and the sequestration, like you say, I don't know how it's supposed to hold it in the ground forever, but it's the other side of the coin, like you say, extraction. Nobody talks about the extraction point of coal, and it's just devastating to the land, to America, you know, and you know, I just want to thank you for touching on that. You know, it just really needs to be brought up to the forefront, is that the original point of origin of the coal is probably the biggest danger to our country and the surrounding areas.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad you reflected on that, because I agree the extraction part is important, and David's film, I think, brings that home as much as the other issues. David, what's your comment?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when you look at some of these extraction issues, to give people a sense of scale, 800,000 acres have been leveled by mountaintop removal mining. 1.4 million are slated to be the total number over the course of the next few years, and it would likely continue and go on a bit larger than that if it isn't stopped.
Mm-hmm.
If we look at the country's reaction to the Exxon Valdez oil spill back in, I guess it was the early 80s, that spill, you know, we were livid about it. What goes on in Appalachia every day, there are these giant slurry impoundments of toxic sludge, and they are unlined, and many of them have more than a billion gallons of sludge in them, and they break, and they leak. Early this year, early this decade, I guess it was in 2001, I think, in Martin County, Kentucky, there was a break that was larger than the Exxon Valdez spill.
Yeah.
And that sludge made it out into, you know, the Tug River, and then ultimately into the Ohio River, and it was a mess, and there was very, very little cleanup. And there were hundreds of these slurry impoundments dotted throughout Appalachia.
Can I say one other thing?
Go ahead, Chris, yeah.
I'm sorry for interrupting that.
No, go on.
I have written to Brian Switzer in Montana.
Yeah.
And he will not address the extraction problem. He glossed over it and just talked about how great the pumping the CO2 into the ground was, but mm-hmm. he won't, you know, I asked, I said, which mountaintops are you going to blow off of beautiful Montana?
Yeah.
You know? So, anyway, thank you so much for what you're doing, and I can't wait to see the film.
Okay.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for calling in.
Good to hear from you, Chris.
Representative in North Carolina who just introduced a bill on the floor in North Carolina State that they not bring in any coal derived from mountaintop removal mining.
Hmm. And David, what happens after the life cycle of a mine that, you know, has been taken from the top, if you will?
Yeah.
These companies just walk away, don't they, and kind of hand it over to a Superfund site or something? But they create these huge ecological messes. I mean, the video that you show of these slurry pools, just imagine, you know, what is in that sludge and how difficult it is to break it down and keep it from, toxifying the groundwater and other surrounding issues.
Yeah, the sludge ponds, nothing happens. There's no Superfund. There's no cleanup that happens. They sit there indefinitely. Because of breaks that have happened, there's a regulation that they can only be 80% full at a time, but there are still operations going on around them. So what tends to happen is the coal companies seek injection permits, and they actually inject the slurry into underground workings, old mines that are now closed. And that's how it most directly gets into the groundwater. And down into the artesian layers.
And you show in the film that they do only rudimentary drainage plans, and so they, you know, take a pile of rocks off the mountain, they put some of it back on, but they fill up the nearby valley with the spoils and, the stuff that they can't use.
That's correct.
And then you've seen, as you depict, this family's land has been subjected to unexpected large-scale flooding.
That's right.
And so with that as a picture in my mind, I imagine that even less is done for these big pools of sludge. And so as that leaches into the groundwater or somehow breaks through its barriers, nobody's responsible for that. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, in theory, the state DEP is responsible for making sure that people have access to clean water. The people that I profile in the film in the area of Williamson down in Mingo County in West Virginia, you know, they had been fighting for a very long time, and their towns are near a small city that has municipal water. So they have ultimately been able to get water from that city after years of poisoning themselves and their children. But this is cropping up all over the place. There's another group in central West Virginia that recently contacted the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition because they suddenly are seeing black water for the first time and they hadn't seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a common problem, and just how common it is, I don't think anybody knows yet.
Yeah. David, any screenings that you have scheduled on the West Coast that my listeners might like to know about?
Well, certainly we're hoping to have some film festival screenings in the San Francisco area in October, and I don't want to speak too quickly about that because nothing yet is confirmed.
Okay.
We will have a screening in San Francisco in late October, and it's looking like that will be at the Sundance Theater.
Okay.
Well,
very good. And in the meantime, I want people to go to the website, burningthefuture.com. That's where you can order a DVD and get full information about this powerful documentary. David Novak, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Peter.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye.
Coming up next, we'll talk about that stinker, the FISA bill that passed out of the House on Friday. And just before that, Dar Jamail checks in about the current status of Iraq.
We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
As oil prices rise, speculators in the congressional crosshairs.
Oil has been transformed from an energy source into a financial asset.
A survey finds we're a very religious country.
92% of Americans say they believe in God or universal spirits.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. The price of crude oil moved higher today, up a dollar to $136.40 a barrel. Analyst Tom Close says the market shrugged off Saudi Arabia's decision to boost output.
They're increasing production by about 200,000 barrels a day, and world demand is about 87 million barrels a day. So it was really just a token move.
At a hearing on Capitol Hill,
today we hope to learn whether this wave of speculation has separated prices from the very supply and demand fundamentals that are supposed to balance the market.
Panel Chairman Bart Stupak, CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
Top oil analysts told Congress there's simply no way changes in supply or demand could account for the doubling of oil prices in less than a year. Edward Krapel said there's no question Wall Street investors pouring money into oil futures looking for better returns than stocks helped drive up the price.
We blame the Chinese, we blame the Saudis, we blame OPEC. But I remembered earlier this morning the statement from that great American philosopher, Pogo. We have met the enemy, and he is us.
Though the Bush administration still downplays the importance of speculation, there's growing support in Congress for much tighter regulation of commodity markets to try to burst the oil bubble. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
John McCain launched an alternative energy initiative today proposing
a $300 million prize for the development of a battery package. It has the size, capacity, cost, and power to leapfrog the commercially available plug-in hybrids or electric cars. That's $1 for every man, woman, and child in the U.S.
He also called for $5,000 tax credits for people who buy zero-emission vehicles. Now this.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, buy three Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the fourth free. Plus, all other Goodyear tires are on sale. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 6/13/08 to 6/28/08.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month's supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
What do you believe in? A survey of 35,000 Americans finds that almost everyone has some form of religious belief. And John Green of the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life says many take a live-and-let-live attitude toward other faiths.
7 out of 10 Americans with a religious affiliation told us that they believed that many religions, and not just their own, can lead to eternal life.
The survey, as CBS News correspondent Chip Reed reports, finds few people are dogmatic about their religion.
92% of Americans say they believe in God or universal spirit, so that's a very high number. But one of the authors of the study says it's about 3 miles wide and 3 inches deep, because Americans sometimes kind of pick and choose like they're at a salad bar, whether or not they want to believe in heaven or hell, whether or not they want to actually believe that the scripture is the word of God, whether or not they actually are going to pray every day or go to services every week.
21% of those who describe themselves as atheists said they believe in a higher power. Sandbagging continues along the Mississippi River. It's expected to crest in Winfield, Missouri on Wednesday. CBS News correspondent Ben Tracy is in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, where the receding Cedar River left an awful mess.
You walk down the streets in these neighborhoods, and the sidewalks are just piled several feet high with everything that you would find in someone's house, from their dressers to their washing machines to children's toys to their pictures and scrapbooks. It's just devastating.
Pilots for United Airlines are having their wings clipped.
Our plan is to furlough 950 active pilots.
Company spokeswoman Megan McCarthy says there will be fewer flights as United cuts its schedule due to high fuel prices. The Associated Press says the Bush administration is thinking about establishing a U.S. interest section in Iran. There's been no American diplomatic presence in that country since the U.S. embassy was overrun by Islamic revolutionaries in 1979. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, buy 3 Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the 4th free. Plus, all other Goodyear tires are on sale. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 6/13/08 to 6/20/08.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world, and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Coming up later this hour, we're going to talk about that stinker, the FISA bill that passed through the House on Friday.
George is in the jungle, knocking on the door.
Later this hour, Caroline Frederickson from the ACLU and Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison will join us. The long, dark night continues in America, and sometimes it's even darker in Iraq because, hey, The lights aren't on. They don't have regular power generation. That's just one of the issues that people there face. Dar Jamail has been to Iraq on several occasions, spent about 8 weeks there over the past few years, and he combined that, compiled it into a book called Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq. Dar Jamail, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Peter. Always good to be with you.
And I understand you and your book won an award, and you had to travel to England, and they paid you.
That's right. It was a new kind of award for me and my experience, for sure. But I was very honored to be a co-recipient of the 2008 Martha Gellhorn Prize for Journalism. It's based on the ideals of her work of being a journalist that really went after the state and was unafraid to report on what was happening in wars and was always very critical of governments. Her opinion of governments was all governments are bad and some are worse. Mm-hmm. And that was the spirit she took into her journalism and wrote fiercely as far as bearing witness and really reporting accurately. So I shared it with a man named Mohammed Omer, who's been reporting valiantly from inside of Gaza where he lives. So it was a great privilege to get to go there and be given the award by John Pilger.
Well, congratulations to you. Your work is good, and you deserve the recognition.
Thank you.
Dar, let me just start with a couple of baseline questions. I referenced the power problems. How much electricity is being generated, and are the lights on 24/7 in Iraq today?
Well, the electricity situation has only consistently grown worse from the day the invasion was launched back in March 2003 until today, where the average home across all of Iraq, even including in the vaunted Kurdistan region, which is often held up as a success story, even including that region, the average house has less than 5 hours per day. It's not uncommon for houses to go 2, 3, 4, sometimes 5 days with zero electricity whatsoever. And when we talk about this electricity, it's not like out here in California where if we have rolling blackouts, you know when it's coming and for how long it's going to be off, and you can plan and schedule around that. In Iraq, it's completely sporadic. You might have 15 minutes in the middle of the day and then nothing until 2 a.m. at night, and then maybe you'll have even 3 hours straight. But the point is it's very unpredictable, and we have to keep in mind this is in the context of Iraq now in the summer where it's regularly over 110 degrees every single day. And in parts of southern Iraq, it's already up in the 120s, 130s at times, and that's going to get even warmer as we get into July and August.
And the human misery of not being able to run a fan or an air conditioner is one thing, but you can't keep food if you don't have refrigeration. You've got to go forage for it on a daily basis.
Exactly. You can't freeze anything and pull it out of the freezer. You can't even keep anything in the fridge. It means every meal is kind of a one-off deal that you have to have fresh food for that meal and cook it, and that's it. You're not going to be saving anything. And then, of course, the cooking all has to be done by gas. Same with the reheating. You know, you can just think about the possibilities of this. And then, of course, warm showers, which, of course, in the summertime aren't necessarily a big deal, but you're not going to have them. More importantly, in the wintertime, you're not going to have warm showers because simply you can't heat water on that kind of sporadic electricity.
Yeah. So the electrical surge isn't working, and it'll be a theme here maybe in a minute. But what about just basic things like clean running water and sanitary sewage disposal?
I have seen reports regarding the water situation that estimate the lower-end estimates are that 40% of Iraqis do not have access to safe drinking water. The higher-end estimates from Oxfam International are that 70% of the total population of the country do not have access to safe drinking water. And this is very, very difficult because that means people, if they want to have safe water, they have to go out and buy bottled water. Well, this is in an economy where we have unemployment that's right now at about 50%, so almost double what it was here during the Great Depression. So people are hard-pressed to go spend their incomes on their precious little incomes, if they're lucky enough to have one, on water. And to be able to have to drink solely bottled water means that some Iraqis are having to pay upwards of 50% of their total income just on water, and then, of course, the rest on food. It's really a survival situation, and that's one thing here that often gets lost in the discussion. We talk about withdrawing troops or redeploying troops and permanent bases in the embassy and how many attacks are happening on American forces and all of this. We forget that Iraqis are literally in a survival mode. Many of them are literally camping in their houses.
Yeah. Well, and this leads to an issue that you have been a lone voice on, which is the refugee crisis. And it's amazing that 20 million people have stayed there under those kinds of conditions, but fully 5 million people have been displaced, about half that number inside Iraq, and the other half have left the country. Huge refugee camps that are overflowing in Syria and Jordan and some other neighboring countries. And so, you know, when we hear these rosy reports that the surge is working, that fewer Americans died during May, that set a low bar going back 3 or 4 years. And so there is this tendency for political leaders here, particularly Republicans, to declare that things are getting much, much better. And over the weekend, there were reports that oil exports have increased because there have been fewer attacks on pipelines, and that the high price of oil is putting more money into the Baghdad government. But we don't see this playing out in ways that provide basic quality of life and security for an average person who can go out and get a fresh bottle of water before dinner.
Well, that's exactly right. And the reality is, and as you well know, we've talked about it so often, that most of the propaganda that you just quoted is absolute rubbish. The fact is they take little bits and pieces of truth and twist it into a press release. And the reality of, we talk about oil exports. Well, oil exports are up only because up in Kurdistan, they've already commenced privatizing the oil and they're able to get it out of the pipelines in Kurdistan. This is not happening in southern Iraq. This is not bringing any more money into the government because the U.S. is holding this money ransom right now. As was reported by Patrick Coburn in The Independent recently, the U.S. is literally holding tens of billions of dollars of Iraqi money in a bank in New York as basically ransom or as blackmail to say, look, you're going to sign these deals, sign this legislation to privatize Iraq's oil, or we're going to start limiting the access of your, to your own money. So not only is the average Iraqi person not seeing any benefit whatsoever from any increase in oil production, but neither is even the Iraqi government. And money that does go in there, this is an extremely corrupt government. If you talk to any Iraqi on the street today in that country, all my contacts there are telling me the same thing, that people are disgusted in the government. This is a government that can't even get their act together enough to get the garbage collected out of Baghdad, let alone doing something like honestly allocating funds to help refugees or to divert them into the electrical or water infrastructure. So there's just nothing being done to actually help the Iraqi people. And, you know, any idea that security is better and the surge is working, et cetera, anyone that buys that, I would say, all right, well, if you believe that to be true, you go hang out in Baghdad for a month and walk around on the streets and then give us a call and let us know if you think it's still working.
Yeah. Dar Jamail with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Visit his website, dahrdar.org, and you can get information on his latest reports and dispatches. And Dar, this really boggled my mind, and it seems to have kind of dropped out of circulation. But about a month, 6 weeks ago, we were hearing leaders from Washington, even some Democrats, argue that Iraq should shoulder a greater portion of the reconstruction cost. And the idea is that we're going to make them pay for the damage that we did to their country. And I not only think that it's short-sighted, I think it's immoral. And while you can raise a lot of issues about how it should actually be done, I think that we have the pottery barn rule here that we got to observe. We broke it, and we ought to fix it.
Well, it's correct, and it's in that it's absolutely ludicrous to shoulder the Iraqi people and that even the puppet government there with the task of paying for all the of the rebuilding that has to happen when the whole country's been essentially destroyed. It's adding insult to injury. It's yet another brilliant PR move coming out of the Bush administration, but this one also sanctioned by so many Democrats in the House and Senate as well, where, hey, look, we're going to have the Iraqi people start picking up the bill for this, and it's absolutely ludicrous. The Iraqi people right now are struggling, as I mentioned before, to even have access to their own legitimate funds, which are being held by the U.S. government in New York, let alone that they want them to start paying for the rebuilding of electricity plants bombed by the U.S., even as far back as the invasion itself. Other destruction that's caused on a weekly basis from various military operations. And to ask the Iraqi people to do this is absurd. I mean, it's like someone coming and smashing into your house with a car and then saying, oh, look, you dented my car. I'm going to need you to pay for this. And then, yeah, clearly you're going to have to go ahead and pay for your own house, too. That's just not how it works. No one here would stand for it, and the Iraqi people shouldn't be forced to stand for it.
Yeah. And there's so many insults. I mean, companies like Bechtel were hired to rebuild schools and hospitals, and they did a really lousy job. We have hospitals where sewage comes out of the light fixtures, and we're just ready to walk away from that and say, oh, well, we spent some money on it. Of course, we didn't get, American taxpayers didn't get value for their dollar, and neither did the Iraqis get value for what we said we were going to do.
Well, that's right, and this goes back to how corrupt this whole situation was from the very beginning. I mean, it's common knowledge now, and it's well documented that the first year of the occupation under the Coalition Provisional Authority, to this day, there's $7 billion of Iraqi money, quote-unquote, missing, in addition to billions and billions of U.S. taxpayer dollars, quote-unquote, missing. Halliburton's been count dozens, literally dozens of times of defrauding the Pentagon, of overcharging, of making up fake bills, of charging for things that never happened, charging for supplies that never existed in the first place. And that kind of corruption is due to a complete lack of oversight. From the very beginning of this whole catastrophe, there's been no oversight, little to no oversight, of these companies that have been awarded these huge contracts. Halliburton with the biggest, over $20 billion. Bechtel, $2.3 billion. Go on down a long list, because there's over 600 Western corporations with contracts in Iraq today.
Well, and it's so delightful to learn that the Iraq oil company, the Iraq petroleum company, has resurfaced with ExxonMobil, Shell, Total, and BP as the owners, and they're ready to extract that oil in Iraq. We're going to talk more with Dar Jamil and take your phone calls, too, at 888-5-PETER-B, straight ahead.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, authentic, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor authentic Chinese dishes like congee and juke at Jim's Restaurant, 1584 Del Monte in Seaside. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget, Jim's is tops for takeout and catering, too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry in Monterey for 33 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place long before you open your mouth. Dr. Turner interviews every new patient so that he'll understand what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Sally, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 831-375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street, downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. So for all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges. whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers. For alcohol and drug treatment, go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
Good afternoon. Happy Monday. Checking traffic on KRXA. We'll start you off in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Southbound 17 at Summit Road. The right lane is shut down due to an earlier brush fire that was burning near Upper Glenwood Drive. Traffic is slow from Idlewild Drive right now. Your alternate routes, Highway 9 and Summit Road. Big rigs cannot use those roadways, so you should take 92 to Highway 1 or 129 to get you around all of that. Also, Hecker Pass, two separate grass fires burning. 152 has been shut down in both directions between Watsonville Road and Casterly Road. Those fires, the Whitehurst and Hummingbird fires, there's no estimated time for the roadway to reopen. Take 101 southbound to 129 as your alternate route to get you around that. Now, Larkin Valley Road at Buena Vista Drive getting reports of a grass fire there. Fire department is on the way. This is brought to you by A&E. A&E brings you Intervention, the critically acclaimed real-life series Oprah calls gripping. All new episodes begin tonight at 9, 8 central, only on A&E. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, and I do this so I don't have to be in psychotherapy. We're talking with Dar Jamil, independent investigative reporter who's been covering Iraq and the Middle East. Pick up his book, Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Occupied Iraq. And again, his website, D-A-H-R, dar.org. That's nice and simple. And, Dar, we learned from the New York Times a couple of days ago that four big multinational oil companies, mostly based in the U.S., are trying to resurrect the Iraq Petroleum Company, which was nationalized by Saddam Hussein 36 years ago. And it's, gosh, the same old folks, just like that Who song said. ExxonMobil, Shell, Total, and British Petroleum. And this is something that people like you and Antonia Juhas have been talking about for several years now. And these are these agreements, PSAs, that they have developed to enable them to take the oil. And this is what many people think we went into Iraq to begin with for. What's your opinion?
Well, actually, initially, the big oil companies were not on board to support the invasion because they foresaw what was going to come and the deleterious effects on them, at least in the short term. But now, with, of course, the price of oil as it is and the profits to be made, they're certainly on board, and they're basically making lemonade out of lemons, that is the occupation. And it's interesting to note, too, that these are the same companies that were operating in Iraq before Saddam Hussein made conditions so that they would be unable to operate there.
And Dar, one of the other changing circumstances here is that $130 a barrel on the world spot market, you can afford a fair amount of security and, you know, write off the cost of dead people in your profiteering.
Well, that's basically what's happening, where, you know, when there's enough money to be made, you're going to find people to go in there and make that money. And that's exactly what these companies are doing. And I think they're looking at long term, that there's so much oil in Iraq. This is not about getting in there and trying to get it out right now. It's about getting in there, getting the contracts, and getting your foot in the door and keeping it there so that if and when conditions ever did settle down where they could actually get enough people in there to start making it viable, they'll be there. Because the reality is, as we all know now, watching what's happening here in the U.S. with the cost of oil, the cost of gas at the pump, and what that's doing to the economy, that every passing day, the oil under the ground in Iraq becomes that much more valuable.
Yeah.
And that's what these companies are aiming for for the future.
Joined by Laird in Eureka. Thanks for calling, Laird, from KGOE.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jar. I made a comment a while back that I don't think made sense to many people, but it was about exactly what you guys are talking about. It was about our occupation and the fact that we never learn from history. We went into Vietnam and got kicked out 25, 30 years ago, and today Vietnam is a thriving tiger, or was. I guess they're now having a little problem with China. But anyway, we did the same thing with North Korea 55 years ago, and that country is in shambles. We've never ended the war with them, and all they got is bombs, the atomic bomb. And we did it in Second World War. We occupied Japan and Germany for a short time, got out of their way, and they came back. Is this making any sense to anybody?
All right, Dard, take that one.
Well, I think the baseline point that you make is that the occupation of Iraq is doing nothing but absolutely destroying the country. And if and when the U.S. ever did totally withdraw, certainly there would be a period of chaos and tumult. But eventually, over time, the Iraqis, if given the chance to self-govern, just like the other examples throughout history that you cite, and it's a very important point, it would be a better situation. It's just that simple. I mean, the reality is occupations are inherently immoral and brutal and unsustainable. And when we look at all of them through history, when occupations end, countries are better off for it. And it doesn't take a big stretch of imagination to imagine if our country were being occupied by a very brutal military and people were being detained and disappeared and killed and tortured and our infrastructure was destroyed. When that occupation was over, people here would be able to pick themselves up and make things better off than they were certainly under the occupation.
Laird, thank you for your call. Dar, thanks for your comments. Again, dahr.org. Dar Jamil, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
George Carlin. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. He was clean-cut, mainstream, successful, and safe until he saw Lenny Bruce, at which point George Carlin grew a beard, a ponytail, and an attitude.
A house is just a pile of stuff with a cover on it. And when you leave your house, you got to lock it up. Wouldn't want somebody to come by and take some of your stuff. That's what your house is, a place to keep your stuff while you go out and get more stuff.
He got famous getting arrested for his 7 dirty words routine, but he didn't have to talk dirty to be controversial. Here's Jesus Christ appearing on a talk show.
Are you God?
Well, partly. You know that. I'm a member of the Trinity.
Yes, in fact, you've written a book about the Trinity, haven't you?
That's right. It's called Three's a Crowd.
As I understand it, it's nothing more than a thinly veiled attack on the Holy Ghost.
Listen, it's not an attack. I don't get along with the Holy Ghost, all right? One day he comes in to meet and he's a dove. Another day he's a tongue of fire.
And as for the inerrancy of the gospel?
No, some of that gospel stuff never happened at all. It was just made up. Luke and Mark used a lot of drugs. See, Luke was a physician and he had access to drugs. Matthew and John were okay. But Luke and Mark would write anything.
I don't think he was joking there. His definition of comedy was simple.
That's my job, thinking up goofy s***. Coming around every now and then, letting you know what it is. Or reminding you of things you already knew, but forgot to laugh at the first time.
As easy as that. Now this.
Email. Something people and now businesses cannot live without. New federal e-discovery laws require that certain companies retain email communication for litigation purposes or face serious fines.
Lose the risk, not your wallet.
By installing a Barracuda Message Archiver today. The Barracuda Message Archiver is a comprehensive yet affordable plug-and-play device that indexes and stores all email traffic for easy search and retrieval, providing immediate government compliance. Try the Barracuda Message Archiver free for 30 days. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM, 888-ANTI-SPAM, or log on to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero and Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero and Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Socolo Restaurant in Pacific Grove is the place to go when you're looking for ultra-authentic Mexican food. From our handmade tortillas to our delicious Angus skirt steak, Socolo does it right. You won't find canned tomatoes, frozen meat, or pre-made items at Socolo. Everything is made here. We proudly use only Angus beef. Some of our specialty items include pozole, chicken mole, handmade sopes, and the only handmade flour tortilla on the peninsula. We feature seafood items like wild salmon, ceviche, and numerous shrimp and fish dishes. If you're looking for fresh and authentic Mexican food, Zocalo is the place to go. Zocalo is located at 162 Fountain Avenue in Pacific Grove. Our phone number is 373-7911. Catering and food to go is also available. Zocalo Restaurant at 162 Fountain Avenue, Pacific Grove is the place to go for quality, authentic Mexican food. Call 373-7911 for takeout or reservations. Zocalo will also be opening soon in downtown Salinas. Look for us.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Last Friday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed a bill that legalizes the illegal monitoring of American phone calls and other communications. And in a word, I think it sucks. In granting amnesty to the telephone companies, the majority of Republicans, in fact all but one, and 80 Democrats, agreed to wipe away the record of intentional lawbreaking of this Bush administration and the phone companies who collaborated with them, and with a wish that this law will prevent a future president from violating the FISA law as Bush has. The Democrats, in my view, sold us out. Caroline Fredrickson joins us now, ACLU Legislative Director in Washington. And welcome back to our program, Caroline.
It's a pleasure to be on.
It's nice to talk with you, and I appreciate the fight that you and others in the civil liberties community have put on our behalf. And just a program note, Congressman Keith Ellison, Democrat from Minnesota, is going to call us sometime in the next hour. So it may occur while you're here, Caroline, or maybe in our free speech zone a little bit later.
Okay.
He voted against
it. Good friend.
Yes, he voted against it, and I think his comments will be pretty strong. I wanted to start with the speech that Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker, gave before the vote on Friday in the House. And I was floored by the false choice that she presented. Early in her comments, she said, we can't not have a bill. And what the Democrats have been doing, as you and I have discussed several times over the last few months, Caroline, is they've been standing firm and rejecting the weakness of the Senate and Jay Rockefeller in caving into the Bush administration, particularly on the demand for amnesty for the telephone companies. They call it immunity, but it's amnesty, pure and simple. And I could not accept that when I heard her say it. And I'd like to hear your response. Was there another option besides embracing the bad language and policy of the Senate?
Well, absolutely. There were several other options. And let me just say that it is really another unfortunate demonstration of the Democrats seizing defeat from the jaws of victory, where they had stood up to the president. They said no to his overreaching. They said no to his warrantless wiretapping program. They said no to immunity. And the American public stood behind them. They were applauded. They were applauded by their editorial boards, their local newspapers and radio shows. But most importantly, they were applauded by their constituents. And what did they do? They broke down and made a deal they didn't need to cut with a president who is the most unpopular president in history and is rapidly walking out the door. The other options that they could have taken would have been do nothing. For one thing, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act was still the law of the land. It governs and it sets the mechanism by which national security surveillance can be undertaken by the government. It could still go forward, and it could still go forward under what we thought was an appropriate set of judicial proceedings and checks and balances to make sure that the surveillance was done in a way that was going to keep us safe but not do so at the sacrifice of our constitutional rights. Or if they had really felt, you know, driven to do something, why not just put this squarely in the lap of the next president? Just do a short-term extension, kick it down the road 6 months, and let's see whether it's John McCain or Barack Obama. It's a new administration which is going to have a new approach to the issue, and there'll be a new Congress where it could really be fully debated and investigated before they create these permanent extreme powers.
Does this new bill have a four-year sunset?
It does have a four-year sunset, and that is a very long period of time. Now, of course, a sunset is only a forcing mechanism that requires Congress to take it up at the end of 4 years, but we're going to push them really hard, assuming it passes the Senate this week, and it's looking, unfortunately, very likely that it will. We're going to push them to start next year. Next year, there are a couple provisions of the Patriot Act, another terrible piece of legislation that was shepherded through by George W. Bush, and that has a couple provisions that are coming open for reauthorization, and we think that those two issues should be combined because they're all about FISA, essentially, is the main part of the Patriot Act that will be affected. And so there's at least something we're going to demand from our leadership in Congress.
Yeah. And Caroline, I want to tag on to your earlier comment there, because there were many other ways to approach this, not only to kick it down the road, as you say, but also to simply stand firm and say
Absolutely.
That we will not condone this law breaking. We will not, kick this over to inspectors general, who may or may not, ferret out the truth for us. And we need to know why, wiretap requests were made before 9/11. And we also really need to be assured that, we haven't immunized people, who broke the law, but that law breaking is not yet known to the very people who passed this law. There's so many different layers of secrecy. I'm deeply concerned that there are many layers, that have not yet been exposed even in a general way, and that this Congress is rubber stamping an incredible invasion of our privacy that goes beyond even what we've been led to conjecture about.
That's absolutely right. And let me just say that unfortunately, the president and his allies were able to separate the issue of immunity as this kind of grant for these patriotic companies that stepped up in a time of need and did their patriotic duty to keep us safe. And they separate that from the whole FISA structure. So, what people really need to understand is that immunity for the telecoms is ultimately undermining the whole way that FISA has operated up till now, because it is a system of checks and balances, and you never can hold people accountable if once they break the law and violate the rules, they know that they're going to get off because Congress is going to let them off. That just completely upends the whole idea of how we play by the rules in this country and how rule of law is actually supposed to operate. And it gives people the sense that if you've got enough cash in your back pocket to give to politicians, you can buy your way out of any illegal activity.
Caroline Frederickson with us from the ACLU. If you have a comment about the FISA law, give us a call toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And Caroline, I want to thank you for going on the Public Television News Hour and expressing my sentiments and those of others who believe that our Constitution has been sharply restrained in this episode. And one of the comments you made, I think, is worth echoing here, which is that this whole thing is we're being asked to trust our government. We're being asked to trust a government that under its current operators has lied to us, deceived us, maintained a level of secrecy that's unparalleled, unprecedented in American history. And some of this has already begun to unravel, and we can see that. The Supreme Court, for the fourth time, pushed back the torture policies and detention policies and military tribunal plans at Guantanamo. And we have Scott McClellan, who has been busy serving up the information that has cracked the stone wall around the conspiracy that led to the exposure of Valerie Wilson. And so against that, the Democrats caved at a time when they didn't need to. But your comment was to cite Ronald Reagan to say, well, right, trust, but verify. And this is where we're having...
I disagree with a lot that Ronald Reagan said and did, but one of the things he understood was that trust is not the way government operates, and it can't operate on trust. And what, in the debate that I had with George Terwilliger, who'd been a Bush 1 DOJ official and worked under the Reagan administration as well. You know, basically he says, look, we need these powers and they need to be able to go forward because without that, you know, critical information could be lost. And you say, but what about somebody looking over their shoulder? That is a very, very critical factor, because what they're saying to us, essentially what George Bush is saying and what congressional leadership is saying, is we can trust our intelligence personnel. And I think all of us, you know, assume that the vast majority of them are well-intentioned, but even well-intentioned people do things that violate other people's rights.
Yeah.
Because if they don't understand that there is a line between what is legal and what is illegal, they're likely to go too far. And that's what that all is based on. It's the issue of, yes, we trust them. Yes, we believe they're doing the right thing, but we need to have the ability to look over their shoulder, just because sometimes people are overzealous in their efforts to do the right thing and end up doing the wrong thing.
And Caroline, as you made that comment and I was watching on the news hour, I was cheering you along, and I wanted to equip you with one of those little Bush prompters. You know, you wear it on your back and it gives you lines that you might not have remembered. Because what I thought of next was, well, just look at what we know about how the FBI has used national security letters. These are warrants that don't require court approval. And the FBI's own inspector general, with the agreement of Director Mueller, they have admitted that they have widely abused these national security letters aimed at librarians and bankers and others to cough up information about certain persons of interest. And that's just one of the programs that's on the surface that we know something about.
That's absolutely right. It's a fabulous point. I wish I'd made it. There was it's a frustrating situation when you have 8 minutes, really, and divided between three people.
Yeah.
But that is a wonderful point and exactly underscores what I was trying to say, which is that power is corrupting, and that the only way that a democracy really functions is by having power be contained within mechanisms that ensure checks and balances. And that's why we have the whole separation of powers, so that each branch of government, theoretically, is supposed to check the other ones. And really, we've had a major breakdown because we've had Congress sitting on its hands, or even in the case of this FISA, actually affirmatively giving up their ability to check the administration and trying desperately to undercut the ability of the courts to check the administration. And in the torture area, it really has only been the independence of, you know, this Supreme Court, which is pretty amazing because it's not exactly a radical left-wing court, but it's only been this court that has been able to bring some of this to an end and hopefully help start a process where there's an actual real judicial consideration of who's an enemy combatant and who's not, and who should be held at Guantanamo and who should be released.
Yeah, it is amazing. Steve in Salinas, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show with the ACLU's Caroline Fredrickson.
Good afternoon. A couple of things that nobody seems to remember, and I'm not sure if Congress understands this or not, members of Congress, but they started, you know, tapping our phones illegally about 2 weeks after they took office.
No, it wasn't quite that. It was at the end of February that Quest Communications in Denver is the earliest to report that they received a request for this kind of eavesdropping. And what's interesting, Steve, is the request that they received was not for long distance or international calls. It was coded for intercepts of local and domestic communications. And this, again, is one of the unknowns that the Democrats have helped sweep under the rug, and it may stay there permanently.
That's,
Caroline?
That's my point.
Just a second. Go ahead, Caroline.
Well, that's very true, and I think if we look back to sort of what the genesis of all of these policies was, it was this theory that seems to have been promulgated mostly by Dick Cheney about the executive branch and the unitary executive and his determination to bring back to the presidency some of the powers that he thought it had lost after Watergate. So it is this very theoretical construct in some ways, which makes total sense why they would have actually wanted to start using this power even before the event that they could ascribe it to of 9/11, right? They just thought, he just thought, that the president should have pretty much carte blanche, certainly in any national security-related matter, anything he wanted to designate a national security-related matter.
And there was Lamar Smith, a Republican from Texas, again restating incorrectly, oh, this was done in response to 9/11. Steve?
Well, yeah, that's my point. They keep saying this was a response to 9/11, and nobody seems to know that it started a long time before 9/11. And another point that they don't remember is, if this stuff does any good, then how come they couldn't stop 9/11?
Those are very good points, and I think the other thing, though, is that they are constantly spreading misinformation, and they have tried very hard to say that FISA and the structure of FISA was behind 9/11. That is, that there was information available that, because there were so many limitations posed by FISA, they couldn't get at this information. And, of course, the truth is, the sad truth is, they had the information. They knew that there were some of these terrorists in the country already. They bungled it.
Yeah.
They did not follow up on leads. They did not translate the messages that had come in that were in Arabic. They left so much to be done that could have been done to keep us safe. So what do? They blame it on FISA, which was working just fine.
We're going to take a break and return with Caroline Frederickson. Congressman Keith Ellison, Democrat from Minnesota, will be joining us sometime in the next 40 minutes or so to talk about FISA. Your calls and comments, welcome. Toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You can share a podcast of this portion or any part of the Peter B. Collins Show with a friend. Just log on to my homepage at PeterBCollins.com. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Good afternoon. Happy Monday. Checking traffic on KRXA. We'll start you off in the Santa Cruz Mountains. Southbound 17 at Summit Road. The right lane is shut down due to an earlier brush fire that was burning near Upper Glenwood Drive. Traffic is slow from Idlewild Drive right now. Your alternate routes, Highway 9 and Summit Road. Big rigs cannot use those roadways, so you should take 92 to Highway 1 or 129 to get you around all of that. Also, Hecker Pass, two separate grass fires burning. 152 has been shut down in both directions between Watsonville Road and Casterly Road. Those fires, the Whitehurst and Hummingbird fires, there's no estimated time for the roadway to reopen. Take 101 southbound to 129 as your alternate route to get you around that. Now, Larkin Valley Road at Buena Vista Drive getting reports of a grass fire there. Fire department is on the way. This is brought to you by A&E. A&E brings you Intervention, the critically acclaimed real-life series Oprah calls gripping. All new episodes begin tonight at 9, 8 Central, only on A&E. I'm Nate Nix. That's traffic on KRXA.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic, one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggie Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eats, and will return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise,
582-9149.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain naturally for you, your children, and even your pets. With 8 professionals, techniques like quantum biofeedback, homeopathy, infrared and ozone steam saunas, and lymphatic drainage are used to help rid your body of toxins, which can cause disease. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic pain for years. Trina Hammack uses state-of-the-art quantum biofeedback and Rolf structural integration. I feel better physically and mentally. Cornerstone also offers ionic foot baths, massage, organic microcurrent facials, and the latest in body strengthening and corrective exercise specifically designed for your body so you'll start living pain-free. Tired of taking medicines? Cornerstone uses homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils. Finally, an alternative that really works is here for your entire family. Cornerstone Wellness Center at 1088 Cass Street in Monterey. Call 373-6204. 373-6204.
We're talking about that stinker of a FISA bill passed out of the House of Representatives on Friday. It goes to the Senate this week. Your calls and comments welcome right now and into next hour in the free speech zone. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Your calls are subject to monitoring by the National Security Agency because the Democrats have helped legalize it. Caroline Frederickson with us from the ACLU. And, Caroline, we don't protect anybody on this program. I wanted to ask you your honest thoughts about Senator Barack Obama and his position on these issues. He's been generally silent, but the campaign issued a statement over the weekend saying that he would like to try to remove the immunity provision in the Senate, but he doesn't see that that's highly likely. What are your thoughts about his posture on this, and do you think he's been as aggressive as he could have been?
Well, you know, the same disappointment that we have with other Democratic leaders, we have with him. I mean, it has been a real cop-out, I think, on the part of all of them. And basically, what it seems to have been is a calculation from Steny Hoyer and Nancy Pelosi to others that somehow, for some reason, this is a bad election issue, and they're trying to take it off the table. And unfortunately, there are obviously others who agree with that stance. It's really deeply unfortunate. Right now we're focused on trying to get as many votes as we can in the Senate in opposition to the bill, and there's some potential that there may be a vote directly on immunity. But this, you know, is unfortunately just window dressing because we all know that it's going to be a 60-vote vote because the Republicans will require either through filibuster or through an agreement, that there have to be 60 votes. We know there aren't 60 votes in the Senate to oppose immunity. So it gives everybody a free vote, and then they can say they tried and let the bill go through and become law. And as I said, it's just it's a real cop-out, an effort to get political cover from the entire range of Democratic leaders.
Yeah, very well put. I appreciate that. And George from Oregon couldn't hold on the line during the break, but he asked, isn't this FISA law so unconstitutional that it could be taken to the Supreme Court? Now, that's a multi-part question because the people on the Supreme Court are not hostile to the elements in this bill, you know, based on what I know. We have had some remarkable slaps on the wrist for the Bush administration over Guantanamo and those related issues, but I don't have a sense that this Supreme Court has a strong feeling about holding the telecoms or this administration accountable.
Well, we'll see. You know, Sandra Day O'Connor, in one of the cases, I think it was the Hamdan case dealing with the detainees at Guantanamo, said, war is not a blank check to dismantle civil liberties. And that's a loose quotation, excuse me. But I think that, you know, there are definitely going to be challenges once this, you know, assuming it becomes law, once it's signed into law, the advocates, including the ACLU, will be right back in court. There'll be the cases that are proceeding against the telecoms. This will be an added issue that will be brought before the courts. Are the provisions giving immunity actually constitutional? There's a big question, and that will certainly be a point for litigation. And is the other part of this bill, which essentially dismantles FISA and allows the president to go forward with widespread eavesdropping, is that consistent with our Fourth Amendment? Is that really something that complies with the warrant requirement of the Fourth Amendment? Well, I don't think so. And so that will obviously be a point for litigation as well. And simply because Congress passed the law doesn't mean that's the end of the fight.
That's Caroline Frederickson from the ACLU. Joining us now is Congressman Keith Ellison, a Democrat from Minnesota. Congressman, thanks for calling.
Hey, how's it going?
Nice to talk with you again. We had a chance to meet in Minneapolis a few weeks ago.
Yeah, no, it was great seeing you there, man. I'm hoping that you and I could talk on a regular basis, and here we are.
Well, here we are. And, Congressman, I only have about 2 minutes before the break, so depending on your voting schedule, maybe we can continue this after the top of the hour.
Yeah, we're done tonight.
Oh, good. Well, then, let me get your quick comment now, and we'll have you back after the top of the hour news. But tell me how you feel about the way your colleagues voted on the FISA bill on Friday.
Disgusted. I mean, I voted no because I don't think that those companies that conspired with the Bush administration to spy on Americans should get a free pass.
Mm-hmm.
The fact is that they did wrong. They should be held accountable in courts. That's what happens when you violate people's rights. And there was no way they should get any kind of telecom immunity. I'm very disappointed. And I voted no. I wish I could have voted heck no.
You can even use the double hockey sticks on this show, Congressman.
On your show, you're. Yeah, there you go. That's great, man.
Well, let me get
a. I can say for the ACLU, Congressman Ellison has been a fabulous champion of the Constitution, and we are so thankful that he is there fighting to make sure that our constitutional rights are protected every day.
You bet, you bet. And thank you guys for your struggle to preserve our Constitution.
And Caroline, as we ring off, we got about 30 seconds here. What would you like to direct my listeners to do to try to fight in the Senate and fight for a new day on FISA?
Raise your voices.
Contact your senators, and you can do that through our website, www.aclu.org. You can go there, find your senator, and send a message. You should call. You should email. You should not let them go to sleep at night without hearing from you that you strongly oppose this warrantless wiretapping bill, and you strongly oppose immunity for the telecoms.
And I encourage Californians to focus on Senator Feinstein from the Lieberman wing of the Democratic Party. She needs a big push on this. Caroline Frederickson, thanks again for your work. We'll talk again soon.
Thanks. It's a pleasure.
And Congressman Ellison, stay with us. We got about 5 minutes, and we'll be back at you right after the break.
You bet.
Thank you, sir. And you stay tuned. That's you on the radio end. I'm Peter B. Collins, and I want to welcome Joshua Smith, our new call screener here at the show today. We're talking with Veronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. Veronique, you started the company more than 30 years ago, and was it partly because you were getting headaches from wine?
Absolutely. I'm an extremely chemically sensitive person. There were no wines, no conventionally grown wines that I could really drink and enjoy until I accidentally tasted my grandfather's wine and discovered to my extreme surprise that I could drink those wines without getting headaches. More and more people suffer the results of the accumulation of toxic substances in our environment, and our tolerance is getting really strained, and therefore it takes a very little amount of a toxic substance for them to start have an unpleasant experience.
Learn more about the Organic Wine Company on the web at ecowine.com. That's ecowine.com. To place an order or ask a question, call 888-ECO-WINE. Toll free, that's 1-888-ECO-WINE. Tell them Peter B. sent you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life finds Americans are religious people, but we're not rigid about it. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports.
One of the most comprehensive surveys of religion in America, the latest Pew findings show almost all Americans say they believe in God, but many have doubts.
While 7 in 10 Americans say that they are absolutely certain of God's existence, a substantial minority are less certain in their belief.
Greg Smith of the Pew Forum says they also found the vast majority of Americans pray and believe the Bible is the word of God, but also found a surprising 70% think those of other religions can also find salvation, and most think the teachings of their own religion are subject to different interpretations. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Washington.
Saudi Arabia announced today that in addition to boosting production by 300,000 barrels a day, it will add another 200,000 barrels to the world supply. On that news, the price of crude oil rose another dollar to $136.40 a barrel. What's happening in this market? CBS News investigative correspondent Armin Katayan was at a congressional hearing today.
A series of charts detailed the massive influx of money pouring into the oil futures market from pension and hedge funds and investment banks, whose only intention is to make money, not actually own oil.
To curb such speculation, Senator Joe Lieberman wants to ban pension funds and other institutional investors from the futures markets. The Bush administration rejects the notion that speculators are to blame. White House spokeswoman Dana Perino says it's simple.
Leveling off of supply while demand has increased, that is really the problem. It's the law of supply and demand. It's economics 101.
The Energy Department says the price of gasoline is holding steady at a national average of $4.08 a gallon, more than a dollar higher than it was a year ago. CBS News correspondent Dan Raviv tells us the IRS has taken note.
Taxpayers who use their cars or trucks for business will be allowed to deduct 58.5 cents per mile in the second half of this year. That's up 8 cents per mile. The Internal Revenue Service calculates that's the extra cost because gasoline's so expensive.
We want to be fair to taxpayers, and we want their deductions to be able to reflect their real cost of any expense, in this case, their expense of operating an automobile.
Doug Shulman, the commissioner of the IRS. Dan Raviv, CBS News, Washington.
The mayor of Gloucester, Massachusetts, disputes the report that 17 teenage girls made a pact to get pregnant at the same time.
We have no evidence from people who work in the schools and who work with these children that there was a pact.
The principal of Gloucester High School made that claim to Time magazine, but now Mayor Carolyn Kirk says he's foggy in his memory as to how he came by that information. The stock market's in pause mode while it waits the outcome of the Fed's interest rate meeting tomorrow. The Dow slipped less than a point to 11,842. This is CBS News.
There's a reason you come to Sherwin-Williams. You just expect more from us. Better paint, better advice, a better way to realize your vision.
At your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams paint store, we have exceptional products and unparalleled expertise because painting and decorating is all we do. And now save up to 20% on a wide variety of paints and stains. Stop in. You'll be amazed what happens when you ask. At Sherwin-Williams. For a store near you, visit SherwinWilliams.com. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
The world calls us small business owners, but really,
there's nothing small about us. We have big ideas.
We see huge potential. We have
larger-than-life expectations, which is why we
and millions of other business owners use Visa Business.
Because we do business with a great big world and no other card.
No other card.
No other card is more accepted by it.
Visa Business, used for big ideas. Visit visa.com/smallbusiness.
The Bush administration will have to do some fence mending with environmentalists, but it has permission to continue fence building. CBS News correspondent Barry Bagnato reports.
A key ruling allowing Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff to bypass laws and regulations that could affect the U.S.-Mexico border fence. The Supreme Court refuses to hear an appeal from environmental groups. Defenders of Wildlife lawyer Brian Segee says not only does the ruling clear the way for
the blockage of wildlife movements along the southern border of species like jaguar,
but it creates, he claims, a dangerous precedent.
The ability of the Secretary of Homeland Security to pick and choose which laws apply.
Using broad powers given to him by Congress, Chertoff has waived more than 30 laws and regulations to speed completion of 670 miles of fence by year's end. Barry Bagnato, CBS News, Washington.
Marlboro cigarettes with high-tech filters to reduce the health risks of smoking are being withdrawn from test markets. Philip Morris says there's been low consumer acceptance. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
Summer's here. It's family vacation time. So before you hit the road, make sure your car is ready at the Sears Summer Travel Sale. Right now at the Sears Auto Center, buy three Goodyear Weather Handler LS, Eagle GTHR, or Wrangler SRA tires and get the fourth free. Plus, all other Goodyear tires are on sale. Get your car serviced 7 days a week, including nights, and shop while you wait. So come into the Sears Auto Center now and get ready to live like it's summer. Sears. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Offer valid 6/13/08 to 6/28/08.
I have high cholesterol. Now I'm eating well and staying active. Guess what? Walmart is doing their part to lower my numbers, too. I can get up to a 3-month supply of my prescription for just $10. So instead of spending more time picking up my medicine, I spend more time picking up my grandkids.
Hi, Grandma.
The Walmart Pharmacy Prescription Program includes hundreds of popular medicines. A 90-day supply of prescription drugs is now $10. A month's supply is still $4. Save money. Live better. Walmart. Restrictions apply. See Walmart.com or your pharmacist for details.
Love.
live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco. Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on 6 minutes into the hour. This is what we call the free speech zone. You know the rules. There aren't any. We take your calls on any subject, any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice. 888-5-PETER-B is the toll-free number. That's 888-573-8372. And you can always email me, humblehost@peterbcollins.com. We continue with Democratic Congressman Keith Ellison. He represents a district near Minneapolis, and I got a chance to meet him when I was in Minnesota just a few weeks back at the National Conference for Media Reform. And, Congressman, we have a little more time here. We're not crunched by the clock here for about 10 minutes. And I just wanted to ask you to expand a little bit, because I am baffled as to why the Democratic leadership, A, permitted the Protect America Act to hit the floor in front of the recess last August, and then, not having learned from that lesson, allowed this to occur last week. And that was after encouraging me and many other progressives in this country by standing firm, allowing Protect America to expire at the end of February, and not being intimidated by the Bush administration until last week. And I am just at a loss to explain as to why Nancy Pelosi would accept such a bad bill.
I don't want to defend a bill that I voted against and didn't support. Okay, I don't want to explain why people did something that I bitterly disagree with. But let me just take a stab, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's a legislative device called a discharge petition, which allows for a majority of members of Congress to bring up a measure or a bill over the objection of the speaker. So the Republicans and a group in the Congress called the Blue Dogs were going to conspire together to do a discharge petition to bring up the very bad FISA bill that mm-hmm. the Senate had passed.
Mm-hmm.
So in order to fight off that effort, they came up with this so-called compromise bill, which provides for telecom immunity, which to me is an outrage. And she let that bill come up for a vote. And I think about 153 of us voted no. The balance voted yes. It prevailed. So that's kind of the mechanics. But that's not really what you're asking me. You're not asking me what actually happened, because you could read the paper for that. What you're asking me is, what in the world are we doing up here if it's not standing up for the Constitution? And I can tell you that, you know, I don't have a good answer for you, Peter. I'm disgusted. I'm disappointed. But I'm not discouraged, and I'm going to keep on working on my colleagues and trying to call them to a better place. And I just want to just say to folks who are listening to the show, this is why, you know, it's great to have Democrats in office, and, of course, it's better to have Democrats than Republicans, in my opinion. But Democrats and progressives are not the same.
Yep.
Progressives are people who believe that, you know, we have to have a politics of generosity. We cannot be motivated by fear. We got to believe that peace is better than war and violence. And we've got to believe that our Constitution and individual rights are important, sacred for the American people. And we don't just give in to some fear-mongering policy just because we're scared that we're going to look like we're not protecting the troops. Because we know protecting the troops means keeping them out of a crazy war. Because we know that protecting our privacy means standing up for the Constitution. So we need progressives to identify themselves as such. And we need folks to run for Congress who are progressives. And we were happy to get Donna Edwards in the office last week. She was sworn in.
Right.
And so that's a victory for the progressive cause. But, a lot of these guys who get in, you know, we celebrate them. And, of course, they're nice guys. I'm not trying to pick on anybody individually or personally. But, you know, they vote a very, very right-wing but Democratic agenda, which puts us in a position of doing things that the majority of the American people do not want.
Yeah.
Which is amazing because, you know, the polls are not on our side on this. You know what I mean? Public opinion wants us to stand up and stick up for the Constitution. So even from the standpoint, I mean, leaving alone the constitutional argument, leaving alone the moral argument of American people having a right to privacy, it's not even good politics. You know, every time we yield to this fear-mongering language, you know, we lose a little bit of shine, and we can't afford to lose any, because we need everybody to win in November.
Mm-hmm.
We need everybody. We can't say, well, the anti-war left, the progressives, we don't need them to beat McCain. You better believe we need all hands on deck to beat this, to beat the warmongering McCain. So we can't make decisions like this that fundamentally undermine and shake the confidence of our base. And I just want to tell folks that I voted no, but I still want to apologize for this last vote. Not for my own vote, because I voted no, but for the Congress, for the Democratic caucus.
That's Keith Ellison, Democrat from Minnesota. And for our listeners in the North State, you'll take a little comfort to know that Blue Dog Mike Thompson did not vote yes on the FISA bill. And that came as a surprise to me, but I wanted to get the facts out there because he takes a lot of heat from our listeners. And I'll just say that I'm very disappointed that Ellen Tauscher, who is a conservative Democrat, but who has become a critic of the Bush administration and the war, chose to vote for the bill. Now, Congressman Ellison, tell me what your thoughts are about Senator Obama, because I feel he's been largely missing from this debate. And we'll cut him some slack because he's running for president in an unprecedented manner, and I'm very proud of that. But on this issue, while he has spoken to the constitutional matters as a former law professor at the University of Chicago, and he has accepted himself from the immunity, I call it amnesty, afforded to the phone companies in the bad Senate bill and now this concurring House bill, he has said he wants to work to try to separate the immunity out and get that defeated in the Senate. I don't think that's doable at this point, do you?
Well, you know what? One thing about D.C., man, is that you never know what's doable until it's all over and done. I think that it does make sense for him to try to stand up and fight this thing. I think that it will be a tremendous demonstration of leadership and of support for the Constitution if he were able to do this. And I think if there's one senator that might be able to stop this train, it'd be him. I mean, he's got the juice. He just won the presidential nomination. You know, everybody knows that if we do it this thing right, he will be the president. So hopefully, I'm glad that he said he wants to stop the telecom immunity. And so I'm happy about that. I think we should all support him in his effort to do that.
I think this is an opportunity for him to assert himself as the leader of the Democratic Party and really set the tone for the Senate, even if he loses. Because this is one of the things that has bugged me for so long, Congressman, that the Democrats fear to lose and then they compromise. And I'd rather they stand and lose and have that marker to say, this is what we stand for. And if you agree with that, elect more of us.
Well, let me tell you, a loss in this one vote is not a permanent loss. Today you might be outvoted, but tomorrow your resolve and commitment might shift the tide your way. So you can never count yourself out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact is that a strong, stout statement today, even if we don't have all the votes, might well get us where we're trying to go. So I believe in you. I believe what you said wholeheartedly. The worst thing in the world is not that you get outvoted on one day, because tomorrow's another day. And let me just say this, too. You know, there's a state legislator in Minnesota. Her name is Mary Ellen Otremba, wonderful lady, rural Minnesota. She says, this is the Otremba, quote, Your constituents don't expect you to always be successful, but they expect you to always be faithful. And what that means is folks know you're not going to win them all, but they don't want you to sell out on the basics of what you care about and why they cast that ballot for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and that's not saying we're going to fall on our sword and just do a bunch of symbolic things that don't result in outcomes that are good. But it does mean that sometimes, you know, you just got to be out there and fight the battle, and however it comes out is not in your hands. You just do the best you can with what you got.
We're joined by Dave from Eureka, listening on KGOE. Go ahead, Dave.
Hey, Congressman Ellison, I think the world of you. I got a tough question for you, but I think you can handle it and give us a straight answer. Why do you believe more good members of Congress don't jump on board with a Dennis Kucinich and try to hold these criminals that stole our White House accountable? Why do you think they don't do that?
Well, you know, again, I'm in the position of defending a position I don't take. I support Dennis Kucinich. When I was in a state legislature in Minnesota, I introduced a resolution to impeach Bush. When I got to Congress, I jumped on to impeach Cheney. I support Dennis to impeach Bush now. And, in fact, I was in the chair the very night he introduced the 35 articles of impeachment. So there's that. But let me just say, why aren't other people doing it? Because I think that they think that the time is short on the Bush administration anyway, and that we'll just ride it out. But what I fear is that this guy might try to attack Iran.
Mm-hmm.
He could do any number of crazy things. He might try to hide and destroy the evidence that would prove his nefarious activities as he goes out. I mean, I'm a little worried that the shredders are just going full blast around the clock nowadays.
Well, we know we're not going to see the emails.
Yeah. You know, so I mean, that's one reason why. I mean, people think of impeachment as just an outcome. But you got to think of impeachment as a process.
Right.
You get to ask questions. You get people under oath. You get to subpoena stuff. You get to get documents in and really start digging through what actually happened. So just the investigative process associated with impeachment is extremely valuable.
Amen. Dave, thank you for the call. And Congressman, here's one of my critical points, that even if impeachment hadn't led to a trial in the Senate and a removal of Bush or Cheney, it would have laid down a very important set of markers that, A, we want to know what happened, we want full disclosure and full accountability, and, B, we want to make a statement that we don't tolerate this and we will never permit it to happen again.
Well,
but by,
yeah,
by taking it off the table, my parallel is it's like a cop saying, this gun's not loaded.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like saying, you know, we know you robbed the bank, but, you know, because it might be tough to prosecute you, we're not going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, wait a minute. Now, what you're doing, not only are you not holding one person accountable for wrongdoing, you're telling every other bank robber, hey, man, you know, you might just get away with this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the fact is we're going to have future presidents. Some will be Democrats. Some will be Republicans. Some might be Green. Some might be Independents. But the American Constitution and the people of this country still have a right to have their Constitution upheld. So this is for posterity in many ways, too.
Yeah. Congressman, how's your time? Can I take a break and get five more minutes from you?
Yeah, no problem. I can hang out.
Okay. Please do that. We'll continue in a moment. Andy, stay on the line. I know you want to talk to Congressman Keith Ellison. 888-5. Peter B. is my toll-free number. 888-573-8372. More in a moment on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540. The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hi, I'm Alan Mella with Monterey Business Brokers. Many people aren't aware of the crucial role that a business broker plays in the buying or selling of a business. Many bright people that wouldn't dream of selling their home without a qualified real estate professional or do their taxes without a smart CPA don't have professional representation in the purchase or sale of a business, a transaction that has the potential for a lot more variables and complexity. I market my clients' businesses effectively, handling all aspects of the sales process, and I assist buyers to find the right fit to meet their financial needs and lifestyle. I bust my butt to put the right buyer with the right business, proactively market my sellers' businesses, and network like crazy on their behalf. People say that I'm a creative and energetic guy and that I take care of my clients. I'm here to facilitate positive transitions for buyers and sellers of businesses. If you're ready to buy or sell a business, I'd like to work for you. Give me a call at 917-3511. I'm Alan Mello with Monterey Business Brokers. Let's make your best deal happen. Call me at 917-3511.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last.
Hello, I'm Barbara Mossberg. You know you move too fast. And I'm inviting you to join me Sundays to slow down for our poetry hour. Here's the lowdown on our poetry hoedown. Meet me at high noon, and we'll make the morning last. Right here on KRXA 540. What you know when I've come
to... Installing new transmitter. 50,000 cool ones. Operating the finest talk radio station west of the Gavilan Mountains. Priceless. KRXA 540. Think for yourself.
Sofas, dinette sets, mattresses, and more. If you have a home furnishing need, we're the place you need to be. So come on down to your friendly town of Marina and visit us. Furniture Outlet, 3056 Del Monte Boulevard in Marina.
Checking traffic on KRXA, and not a whole lot for you this time around. We have some debris out there. This is northbound 1 at 218 in Monterey. Vehicle swerving to avoid a large amount of broken glass that's in the lane, so drive with caution there. Highway 17 southbound near Summit Road, all the lanes are now open following an earlier grass fire. You may still see traffic backed up to about the Lexington Reservoir. And on the Hecker Pass, we still have a closure 152 both directions between Watsonville Road and the top of the Hecker Pass. Looks like the Hummingbird fire 100% contained in the Whitehurst fire 50% contained, but they're saying by 8 o'clock tonight that should be contained 100% as well. Actually, only residents are being allowed in that area at this time, so if you have proof of residency, you can get through that area. This is brought to you by Western Union. When you need to send money fast, use the telephone money transfer service from Western Union. Use your credit or debit card to send money virtually anywhere in the world 24/7. Just dial 800-CALL-CASH and send money over the phone today. I'm Nate Nix, and that's traffic on KRXA.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, taking your calls in the Free Speech Zone, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We continue with Congressman Keith Ellison from Minnesota, a Democrat, and we're joined by Andy in New York, listening online. Go ahead, Andy.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Congressman Ellison.
Hey there.
You're a breath of fresh air, man. You're great.
Thanks, bro.
My comment is, you know, I spent a lot of time working to get Jerry McNerney elected. I burnt a few Saturdays running around Lodi and Stockton.
You lucky guy.
Trying to get people to vote for him.
Yeah.
This guy goes and he's done some votes that really turned my stomach, and this is another one.
Well, Andy, I helped get Jerry elected, too, and he has declined my interview request since last August when he returned from Iraq and said, well, maybe the surge is working. So I don't know what's happened to Jerry either, but he hasn't been willing to talk to me so that I could give you a better handle on it.
Well, hey, let me dive in here. I don't want you to give up on Jerry, okay? I want you to keep on telling Jerry that, look, you know, we're the people who sent you there. And, you know, we just want to hold you accountable, man. We helped you. And so, look out. So, you know, as we looked out for you, look back out for the people who sent you there. Don't quit on them, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is not the right strategy. The thing is, somebody will be talking to him. If you're not one of them, those folks will obviously have more influence than you will.
I'll
don't quit. I'll just encourage you to do that
tomorrow.
And let me just say this about the Iraq thing. You know, I'm going to tell you this. I'm not trying to make any excuses for anybody, but they put mad spin on us, you know. The fact is, you really had to keep a very clear vision of what was going on, because they keep you in a very tight bubble when they send you to Iraq. You don't
mm-hmm.
get to walk around. You don't get to talk to anybody.
Right.
And so it's very important as a member of Congress that, you know, you know that you are being managed when you go there.
Yes.
And it's still valuable to go there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be very aware that you are being cloistered and that you are not seeing what's really happening.
Right. Well, my only complaint is that if Jerry changed his position, that's fine. I'll respect him as long as he'll communicate with us. But I fear that he's ducking from the out progressives because he's in a very conservative district, and he figures we can't help him hold on to that seat. And I'm just disappointed by the calculation there. Andy, thanks a lot for your call. Keith Ellison, I want to ask you about a measure that is getting more traction in the House, and this is a non-binding resolution encouraging the Bush administration to set up a naval blockade of Iran.
And incredible.
This is kind of the follow-up to the Kyle Lieberman amendment in the Senate. That was a non-binding resolution that designated part of the military in Iran as a terrorist group for bizarre reasons that could allow the Bush administration to rationalize an attack. But we have Ehud Olmert, Prime Minister of Israel, telling us that he came away from a meeting in the Oval Office with assurances that Bush is going to take care of Iran. And I'm very concerned that either before or shortly after the November elections, that Bush and Cheney will pull the trigger.
Well, you know, this thing just won't die. I mean, I remember last December when we were real concerned that they were going to hit Iran, you know, and Cy Hirsch had some things that he had written.
Mm-hmm.
And then the National Intelligence Estimate comes out. It's like, look, they don't have a nuclear weapon. They stopped weaponizing in 2003. That's the best information we got. And then so it kind of put a damper on it all. 16 American spy agencies saying they're not a threat. They're not doing nothing to do it. And that doesn't seem to really get any. And also it says, look, Iran is open to negotiation and subject to pressure and subject to influence if you go talk to them. And then somehow now we are here right now in June, and it feels like there's an imminent possibility of something truly catastrophically stupid happening again. I'm looking at stories. I was reading about this today, and of course, John Bolton, who is a hawk if there ever was one,
yeah.
A warmonger, really,
yep.
Who's saying he's attacking Bush from the right, saying he's not Bush doesn't have a resolve to hit Iran, and they keep on saying they're developing nuclear weapons. The International Atomic Energy Agency says they're not. Okay, why isn't that good enough for anybody? They were right in Iraq. We didn't believe them. They're right now. Why don't we believe them? I mean, it's incredible. It's not even like, people say, well, do you trust Ahmadinejad? We're not trusting or not trusting Ahmadinejad. We're trusting the international agency that is set up to make sure that there's compliance with the Nuclear Nonproliferation Treaty. And by the way, we could get rid of some of our own nukes. We haven't exactly been, the nuclear nonproliferation says that countries that don't have nuclear weapons should not get them, and countries that do have them should get rid of them. We're not getting rid of them.
No, we're not.
So the fact is that, this is a scary time. And let me tell you, there's a lot of members of Congress who are very concerned about this. And so I don't want folks to think that there's nobody on Capitol Hill who cares. A lot of people don't care. A lot of people, including people like Barbara Lee, mm-hmm. Maxine Waters, and Lynn Woolsey.
Right. Congressman, thanks for spending time
you
with us tonight.
Buddy.
I really appreciate it. We'll call you again.
Anytime.
Keith Ellison, Democrat from Minneapolis. Outspoken on my side. We'll take a break and return for more of your phone calls. 888-5-PETER-B. Call me now.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
Hi, I'm Patty Ross, Realtor. What pops into your mind when you hear the word real estate? Security? Investment? White picket fences? Did you know that real estate is the single most sought-after asset on the planet? More people have accumulated wealth through real estate than by any other means. So whether you own property and want to cash in your equity, or simply want to take advantage of buying in this changing market, you need a qualified agent who understands market conditions and will listen to your needs. From Santa Cruz to Salinas, from Carmel to Big Sur, call me, Patty Ross, for a free consultation. I'm hardworking, experienced, and I care about you. Hey, forget the rest, get the best. Call me, Patty Ross. My heart's in it.
Contact Patty Ross at Keller Williams Realty in Carmel at 622-6235. That's 622-6235, or visit her website, pattyrosscarmel.com.
Let the touch of an angel make your next wedding, anniversary, birthday, or family celebration extra special. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe, located at 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside, just across from Craig and Auto Parts, offering full bakery, deli, and cafe services. In the mood for delicious Italian pastries and cookies, specially brewed Latin American coffee, or traditional espresso drinks? Come to Angelina's, where you'll find palate-teasing cheesecakes and specialty cakes for all occasions, as well as tarts and pies with a wide assortment of seasonal flavors. Angelina's Deli features fresh deli sandwiches, breakfast sandwiches, and breakfast burritos. Try Angelina's specialty Mexican and Salvadoran dishes. They're simply delicious. Angelina's Bakery, Deli, and Cafe. Open 7 days a week, Monday through Saturday, 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. Sundays, 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. Treat yourself to the best, where the old world meets the new in a friendly, clean, casual atmosphere. Visit Angelina's today, 1725 Fremont Boulevard, Seaside.
Natura Vita invites all KRXA listeners to participate in the grand opening of its new North Salinas location at 650 East Laurel Drive. Don't miss the fun. With nonstop entertainment, live music, and free samples of natural food and health products, the staff and management welcome all to the inauguration of the new Natura Vita store and restaurant at 650 East Laurel Drive in North Salinas this Sunday afternoon, June 29th from 3 to 5. Don't miss your chance to learn firsthand about traditional and modern natural health products and practices while enjoying delicious and healthy food in a fun and festive atmosphere. Smoothies, anyone? Come to the new Natura Vita store and restaurant this Sunday afternoon from 3 to 5.
Hey, are you driving around looking for a coffee shop with free internet? Right here in Pacific Grove, you'll find Black Forest Espresso, a fun and friendly place to hang out. We have a large espresso bar ready to make any gourmet drink, homemade wraps, mochas, lattes. How about 100% fruit smoothies and old-fashioned milkshakes with 14 flavors? Black Forest is also the only place to get soft-serve fat-free frozen yogurt. We're the last hometown coffee shop at the Country Club Gate Shopping Center at Forest and David next to Save Mart, Pacific Grove. Check out blackforestespresso.com.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Nothing funny about the FISA law. They just legalized surveillance of American citizens in violation of my Fourth Amendment rights. And it's good to have a guy like Keith Ellison, true blue progressive, but not hot-headed, willing to come back and fight another day. I think that sets a good standard for all of us. We're in the free speech zone. All my lines are open right now, so don't hesitate to call. Sure, you're subject to monitoring, but all your calls are subject to being intercepted. So don't be shy about that. And if you're as outraged as I am, I want you to express yourself. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And this is, again, a case where we need to rally as progressives. And we need to make it really clear. For example, I was talking off air with Keith Ellison during the top of the hour news, and I told him that I don't send money to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee because they might give it to these blue dogs or other conservatives. No, I only will make a campaign contribution to someone who I know to be a progressive, and I make those contributions directly to their campaign, not through Washington, D.C. And I'm looking here at the vote tally, and I recognize some names that just floor me. Howard Berman, Joe Baca, Democrats from Southern California. Why would they vote for the FISA bill? Jack Murtha did it because he horse trades with Nancy Pelosi. Jane Harmon did it because she's barely a Democrat. Sylvester Reyes did it because he cut the deal as chair of the Intelligence Committee. And I don't have much regard for his intelligence, frankly. Dennis Cardoza, Democrat from the Central Valley, showing his colors, voting for the FISA bill. James Clyburn, I guess he did it because he's in the leadership. He distinguished himself recently for separating himself from the Clinton campaign. And he's the number three, maybe number four Democrat in the House. Dennis Costa of California. Going down the list here, looking for names that I recognize. Donna Edwards, by the way, the progressive from Maryland, who is now a member. She's actually been elected in the primary and has to polish off a Republican in the fall. But the Democrat she defeated in the primary resigned, so she jumped into office there after a special election. And Donna Edwards, one of her first votes in the House, was against this piece of crap. Jerry McNerney voted for it. Ouch. Now, maybe his calculation is that in that red district that he runs in that he couldn't afford to stick his neck out. But if that's the case, Jerry, talk to me. I'm willing to talk with you. We can agree to disagree, but please don't hide from us. Bart Stupak, Democratic congressman from northern Michigan, who was on this program not too long ago. Disappointed to see his name on the list in support of the FISA bill. Also, I mentioned Ellen Tauscher, an East Bay Democrat before. Ouch! Joe Sestak and Brad Sherman voted for this. Sestak is a former admiral who is a Pennsylvania congressman, first-termer. And I had a great conversation with him recently. I'm shocked that he voted for this. Brad Sherman is a Democrat from Sherman Oaks in the valley there near Los Angeles. And he does tend to vote conservatively at times, but I'm disappointed in this from him. And let's see, Salazar, the congressman from Colorado, those guys, he and his brother, the senator, are big disappointments to me. And here's one that I never thought I'd see on this list. Luis Gutierrez, a very progressive Hispanic Democrat from Chicago. My brother used to work for him. What is his name doing on this list? Well, you understand my distress here. I'd like to hear from you at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And Ben is on the line from Salinas. Hello, Ben. Welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show.
Yeah, Peter. Thanks for keeping up the fight. You know what? With those names you just named, we've got to realize there's a lot of pigs feeding at the trough. And to me, any traitor is a pig. Here's two de facto facts that I've come up with, and I think that I cannot be disproven. We have the equivalent as Speaker of the House, none other than Karen Hughes, because they're going to do to us what they want, and not one of them SOBs on our payroll is going to do something to stop it. Here's my next prediction. I've said it before. I'll say it again. McCain will do what he's told. He is bought and paid for. We're looking at his running mate under protest. He's going to protest Jeb Bush because they need to pardon all this criminality going on. And what is the...
Now, wait. Explain that to me. McCain is going to do what with Jeb Bush?
McCain, he's going to do what they tell him to do. This, he is so weak. Yeah. He needs that money. He needs that money. These people are crawling in our money thanks to all what they've been able to steal. Bremer can't find it. Nobody knows where those billions and billions went. There are some of that's being fed into this campaign because they need to pardon Cheney, Bush, Rove, Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice. They need to pardon those. The only one who will do that and make it stand up like this other criminality is Jeb Bush. If they tell Jeb McCain, Jeb Bush will be your running mate. He'll go through all these dances, but just like Cheney was sent out to find a VP candidate, he comes back, I'm your man. Same scenario, same players, Jeb Bush in the driver's seat, pardons come down, we got more Iran-Contra, and you and I will still continue to get the bill. I challenge all of your listeners worldwide to call in and challenge what the great Ben of Salinas just said, because it's true, it's provable. We got Karen Hughes as Speaker of the House, and Jeb... Jeb Bush is going to be the running mate with McCain, and they may steal it from Florida again and Ohio. Same machines, same way, same cops, same judges, and same Nancy Pelosi, the new sheriff in town. Holy cow, call out the wolves. The chickens are ready.
Thank you, Ben.
All right, man.
I appreciate your passion. Ben's an interesting guy. And I don't know about his predictions here. But the comparison of Karen Hughes to Nancy Pelosi, I wish I could reject it out of hand, Ben. But she has stepped up and delivered those Bush talking points. And as I've referenced, the speech she gave in the well of the House on Friday about why she was going to vote for this bad compromise, even though she said, I'm not encouraging anybody else to do that, she knew she had enough votes with the Republicans in lockstep to pass it. And it is tragic to see the Democrats reach this point. 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. We'll take more of your calls here in the Free Speech Zone in just a moment. But first, I have a report from an amusement park on the East Coast. Ladies and gentlemen, we now go live, not to Palisades Park, but to Coney Island, outside New York City, where Savitri D., who is choreographer and chief holder of the Bibble there in the Church of Stop Shopping, has taken on a new role as Queen Mermaid in the big Coney Island Mermaid Parade that occurred over the weekend. And now Savitri is still a mermaid, and she's on a hunger strike. I'm trying to figure all this out. Savitri, how are you?
Hi, Peter. I'm feeling fine.
And
feeling fine. I have a lot of support here, a lot of people coming by, a lot of people talking to me on the Internet.
Uh-huh. And people can go to RevBilly.com, where the Mermaid Cam is live right now.
That's right, and I'd love for people to come visit, especially if you have memories of Coney Island or even if you just have read about it in a poem. We just love talking about Coney Island here. We're trying to keep out a super mall and a lot of bad development here at Coney Island, which is one of the greatest amusement parks in the world.
Well, but all the great theme parks are corporatized and logo-fied. Why wouldn't you want that to happen at Coney Island, Savitri?
This is a place where all kinds of people have fun together. This is one of the last democratized, truly public spaces in New York City where you can see every race, every class, people from all over the world having a good time, spending very little money, talking to each other, dancing together. The mixing that goes on here is so special and so important to our democracy. You know, I just feel so strongly about it. I honestly, here I am 53 hours into my fast, into my hunger strike, and I feel more strongly than ever. I just found out today that my grandmother survived the fire at Luna Park, and, you know, I feel so tied to this place, but I think many of us do because it's a figment of our imagination. That's what it is.
Yeah. Now, what exactly is your goal? What are you hunger striking to draw attention to or for?
You know, Peter, there's these meetings that happen in every city and every town all over the country, these local meetings, community board meetings, scoping meetings, environmental meetings, and it's very hard to get people to go to those meetings, you know, but truly, sometimes they're the most important thing you can do. It's the most active thing you can do to participate in your democracy. So I was Queen Mermaid, very honored to be Queen Mermaid this year, and I wanted to tie that Mermaid Parade energy, which is just 100,000 people out having a great time on a Saturday afternoon, to this scoping meeting tomorrow night, Tuesday night, here in Coney Island regarding the fate of amusements here. They're trying to turn 60 acres of amusements into 9 acres of amusements.
And what's going to happen with the other 51 acres? A Walmart?
Well, you know, it's not a Walmart because thankfully there's still no Walmart in New York City and they've declined to press their case here because we beat them back. Hallelujah. But no, it's called entertainment retail and you've probably experienced it before and it's unpleasant.
Oh, you know what? I was in Detroit recently and somebody dragged me to a place like that.
Yeah.
And it was awful. I mean, they had all these like video games and arcade games that are based on movies and TV shows. And there was not an original creative thought represented in the entire, and this was a huge indoor playground, you know, bigger than two big box department stores.
Sure. And this is even worse than that. This is like a Toys R Us that happens to have an interactive player piano in the lobby. So it's really the worst of both worlds, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing was the food was bad. Somebody ordered a pizza, and you could tell that they took it out of the microwave too early.
Oh, that's the worst. That doesn't happen here in Coney Island. The food is great here.
Yeah.
Great
now,
taco here.
Now, do I have it right that Reverend Billy was elected King Neptune, and you were named Queen Mermaid?
That's right. Reverend Billy was King Neptune, and we rode in a chariot of sorts, a sort of antique basket down the street. It was so magical and wonderful.
Now, was this a Diebold election, or how did you pull it off?
You know, I think what happened is that this community worked for years on a development plan for this area. And, you know, they came up with a plan that they could all live with, and the city changed it overnight. And the community here responded in a beautiful way. They decided to be really activists. You know, They didn't turn and run. They said, you know what, that's not going to work out here. You know, we worked this out. And they called us, of course, because I think they felt like we could be helpful to their cause, and I really hope we can be in some way. I believe so strongly in these community-based plans. You know, where a community of wildly disparate people come together and hammer out a plan over years. It's incredible that people can do that. And then for a city to come and just act like mom and dad, you know, late at night and say, you know what, it turns out that after all, you can't go stay at Benny's house, you know, or it's just the weird parental government, you know, where they just change their mind all of a sudden. But yeah. the truth, the community is what, you know, this is, how demoralizing is that, Peter, you know, for
it
a community?
Is.
To the democratic process. Like, okay, so all of those people are supposed to believe that they participate in their government? Absolutely not. I mean, that's just, it's awful.
Well, Savitri, thank you for talking with us today, and thanks for taking on this challenge. People can go to the website revbilly.com, no spaces, just R-E-V-Billy, revbilly.com, and click on the link to the Mermaid Cam, and
yeah.
They can watch you live there as you continue your hunger strike for another 24 hours or so. And there's also a great picture of you as Queen Mermaid and Billy as King Neptune. Looks to me like the Pompadour needs a fresh trip to the color lab.
Thanks, Peter.
Let him know. Thank you very much, Savitri D. from the Church of Stop Shopping. Their latest protest there at Coney Island, New York. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. We'll get back to your calls in the free speech zone. You can be outraged about this or anything else, but outrage is the word of the day, so call me, 888-573-8372. And back away from that corporate coffee, will ya?
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Well, final look at traffic this evening on KRXA, and a couple of things out there for you. We'll start you off southbound 1 at 218. A couple of bicyclists riding in the roadway. Drive with caution there. Down to Santa Cruz, southbound 1 before Morrissey Boulevard. An accident with a couple of cars. They're both off to the shoulder. CHP there taking a report. Watsonville, Werner Road at Hall Road. An accident. Vehicle spun up, hit a telephone pole. The pole itself is broken, but all the activity off to the side. CHP out there in a tow truck on the way. Good news for Highway 17, southbound at the summit. All the problems from an earlier grass fire have cleared up for the most part. You may still see some residual slowing from the Lexington Reservoir on up to the summit. Highway 68's been problem-free all afternoon. And, of course, seeing that heavy traffic at the Fishhook in Santa Cruz. And this is brought to you by Jack in the Box. Filling up your tank costs a pretty penny, but filling up your stomach doesn't. On Thursday, June 26th, bring a gas receipt to any participating Jack in the Box and get two classic crunchy tacos for free. Have a great night. I'm Nate Nix with traffic on KRXA.
Cornerstone Wellness Center in Monterey specializes in reducing stress and pain naturally for you, your children, and even your pets. With 8 professionals, techniques like quantum biofeedback, homeopathy, infrared and ozone steam saunas, and lymphatic drainage are used to help rid your body of toxins, which can cause disease. I'm Sheila Gale, and I've lived with chronic pain for years. Trina Hammack uses state-of-the-art quantum biofeedback and Rolf structural integration. I feel better physically and mentally. Cornerstone also offers ionic foot baths, massage, organic microcurrent facials, and the latest in body strengthening and corrective exercise specifically designed for your body so you'll start living pain-free. Tired of taking medicines? Cornerstone uses homeopathy and top-of-the-line essential oils. Finally, an alternative that really works is here for your entire family. Cornerstone Wellness Center at 1088 Cass Street in Monterey. Call 373-6204. 373-6204.
Locally owned, the Ugly Mug Coffee House in SoCal Village. Always lively, always wired. We serve the best organic, shade-grown coffees, loose-leaf teas, original bar drinks, and delectable goodies in friendly community atmosphere. Open every day, 6 a.m. till 9 p.m., complete with music, Wi-Fi, and the craziest regulars in Santa Cruz. Meet your friends or just bring yourself to the Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive at Porter Street, for lively conversations and the best cappuccino in town. Hey, what do you want? Rare frickin' sunshine? Delicious.
The Ugly Mug, SoCal Drive and Porter Street in SoCal.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
And we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you're losing your religion, why don't you join the Church of Stop Shopping? Just go to the website revbilly.com. And during the break there, I was watching the Mermaid Cam, and you can see Savitri, who we were talking with in the preceding segment, as she continues her hunger strike to get people to attend this meeting to prevent the corporatization of Coney Island Amusement Park there in New York. 888-5 Peter B. There's still room for another call or two here in the Free Speech Zone. We got John in Carmel Valley. Hi, John.
You were commenting after you had Vincent Bugliosi on that you said something to the effect that he had quite an ego and that didn't surprise me.
Yeah.
but I would say Nancy Pelosi probably has a big one, too, to have decided to do what she's done. And if you notice, they both have Italian last names that end in S-I. And I would say, look at the difference between the two of them. One of them said over and over that he was going to go after Bush to impeach him, and there was going to be nothing get in the way if he could help it. Her attitude is if she doesn't have everything go 100% her way and have everything locked up and guaranteed, she's not going to risk anything. Because that's the kind of mentality. It's like, I just can't risk the Democrats who are running in districts that are dominated by Republicans. So we'll just let Bush do whatever, and maybe in the distant future he'll get some kind of legal action taken against him.
Well, John, it is deeply disappointing, and in some ways it's difficult to process because I don't understand why Pelosi has made these calculations, and there are a series of them. They intentionally brought this to a vote now, hoping that by November we'll all be giddy with the idea of a Democratic victory and we'll forget or overlook this. And she does have a point because the American public has such a limited attention span and the media doesn't do much to remind us even of recent events. that a lot of people will have moved on by then. I won't. You won't, probably. And it's going to stick with me for a long, long time. Now, the other side of this is even harder to take, because when you see calculating politicians make calculations about elections, you can rationalize certain things. But the damage to the Constitution is permanent. It's not something that, you know, will rise or fall with the next election. And I think that we will have to really call this Pelosi's darkest moment and make sure she understands that. Because the other calculation they're making is that we don't have any place else to go, and that progressives will not, in large numbers, vote for McCain or vote for Republican members of Congress or Republican challengers to Democratic incumbents. And we need to find ways of expressing the idea that we won't be taken for granted without delivering everything to the enemy. And that's a very tricky, you know, terrain to cross, to traverse. And we see the angry Clinton supporters who are saying, you know, they won't support Obama because Obama supporters booed when Hillary's name was mentioned in Detroit, when Gore gave that endorsement. Well, that seems pretty trivial to me. But this, if people stand on principle and say, I can't vote for Democrats this fall, or at least I can't vote for Democrats who voted for this FISA law, I don't have a strong argument against that. And I think, you know, to the extent that people take those principled positions, you can express it with the way you do or don't make political contributions. You can express it through emails and other communications with elected leaders like Keith Ellison, who had the smarts, the courage, and the wisdom to vote against this piece of trash. But as Ellison was telling us, you know, I'm very angry and disappointed with Jerry McNerney. At minimum, I think he should have the respect to talk with us and tell us what his positions are and how they might have changed. But these are very difficult times. And, you know, to me, the war and our Constitution are the most critical issues that we need to evaluate as we support people or don't support them, vote for them or don't vote for them this fall.
On and on and on. I mean, the war obviously probably is number one, but there's never been any situation like this where Nixon's era looks so inconsequential. And I think a lot of Democrats decided then we'll never get into this. It probably goes back to that and to George McGovern's loss. Centrism, to me, it's the most awful thing that ever came down the pike. It has botched this. She's just part of that mindset. And it would work in a more normal time. I wouldn't have these big reservations, but you can't use centrist mentality to deal with Bush. The idea that you cut a deal is insane.
Right. You cannot compromise with a madman, and you can't negotiate with one. Thank you, John.
They can.
Yes, they do.
Happy trails to you.
Thanks to Joshua Emerson Smith, who joined us here on the Peter B. Collins Show today and did not hang up on one caller. That's what I usually do. Let's do it again tomorrow. Meet me here by the radio, same time, same great stations.
Until then.
I'm John Gorenfeld, and I've just written a book, Bad Moon Rising, because I thought maybe it said something about just how crazy our politics have become when a wealthy newspaper publisher dresses up like King George III in front of congressmen, and no one seems to care. Bad Moon Rising is about the conservative love affair with the Reverend Moon, the cult leader who publishes the Washington Times, travels with the Bush family.
Reverend Moon never tried to tell him what to say.
And puts on Washington's worst dinner parties. The book is Bad Moon Rising, how Reverend Moon created the Washington Times, seduced the religious right, and built an American kingdom. The foreword's by Barry Lynn. Bad Moon Rising follows an all-star cast of conservatives as they sell their souls to a cult leader, from Jerry Falwell to John McCain's top advisor. You name them, they're in my book. Bad Moon Rising. Buy it for a conservative friend and blow someone's mind. Find out more at thekingofamerica.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The Bush administration says the law of supply and demand still governs oil prices, but some in Congress believe speculators, people looking to make cash instead of buy oil, have taken the law into their own hands. CBS News correspondent Bob Fuss reports on a hearing today.
Top oil analysts testifying before Congress all agreed speculation has driven up oil prices well above where they should be, according to supply and demand. Fidel Gadd of Oppenheimer and Company says it's clearly a bubble.
Oil prices more than doubled, but industry fundamentals have little changed.
Congress wants to burst that bubble and is looking at a number of proposals to stop the vast amount of speculative money being poured into oil futures by large investors, with tougher regulation that would sharply limit these speculative investments. Bob Fuss, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The national average for regular gasoline is holding steady at $4.08 a gallon. With prices this high and showing no sign of dropping, some Americans have drastically altered their lifestyles. CBS News correspondent Nancy Cordes takes a look.
Mary Cerati needed to cut her driving costs, so she moved to a Pasadena, California apartment complex that straddles a light rail hub, saving her $2.10 a month at the pump.
And now I'm filling up once a month instead of once a week.
In a recent survey of 900 Coldwell Banker realtors, a stunning 78% said rising fuel costs were causing their clients to consider city living.
The Houston school system is considering a one-time $250 bonus for its lowest-paid employees to help them pay for gas to get to work. We believe. A survey by the Pew Center for Religion and Public Life finds most Americans believe in God, but don't necessarily believe that their brand of religion is the one true faith. CBS News correspondent Chip Reed covered this story.
What we learned more than anything else in the survey is that Americans have diverse religious beliefs and very accepting religious beliefs. They don't say that they have the only path to salvation. Even evangelical Christians, 57%, say other religions provide a pathway to heaven. And with mainline religions, it's a much higher percentage than that.
The study's authors say that because Americans come in contact with people of many faiths, they've come to see those religions as valid.